Good afternoon, good evening, everyone. My name is Thomas Rickert, and I'm one of the co-chairs of the cross-community on enhancing ICANN's accountability. Welcome to this first session of the CCWG in the ICANN 53 meeting in Buenos Aires. And first of all, I would like to do a roll call, and the suggestion is that we conduct the roll call as we usually do by taking the list from the Adobe room. So I think we should give it another 3 or 4 minutes for people to join the Adobe. But that's the way that we are going about with that. Can those who are just on the audio line participating remotely please make themselves heard so that we can add them to the list? And for those who are not making their way into the Adobe, please send us an email or raise your hand sometime later, and then we will manually add you to the list. Second thing for me to do in terms of housekeeping is ask whether there are any updates, statements of interest.
Yeah.
Small again.
That was my statement of interest also. I would really like to see the address.
Yeah, so we're going to capture roll call in a few minutes to give everybody the opportunity to get into the Adobe. But any updates to statements of interest? There don't seem to be any. Then I think we can continue discussing a little bit how we're going to go about with this very morning. As you will recall, we have recently closed the first public comment period of our work, and since then the sub-teams in particular have done a tremendous job in analyzing public comment and writing up a report detailing responses or suggested responses that we as the whole CCWG could publish. And I guess that's an important reminder for us that in terms of process, we have started the analysis of public comment by putting all the comments into what we call the public comment review tool. So the comments that we received have been sliced and added to the respective parts of our report so that we would have all the comments relating to a specific question in one place. Then the whole group has gone through this report and taken a look at it. We had a three-hour session remotely to discuss public comment we received, and then we deferred the actual work to sub-teams to prepare a written response. And today we're going to hear reports from the rapporteurs on what their findings were when analyzing public comment. And it is our intent to agree with this group, if possible, on the way to proceed with analyzing the public comment. So you should, after having heard from the rapporteurs, you should make yourself heard if you have any objections or concerns with the outcome of the analysis. But then the detail of how we're going to finalize our report will again be done by the sub-teams. So we think that it would not be the best use of our time going through all the cells of the spreadsheet, going through all the written reports in detail, line by line, as a group. But we will just agree on how we will proceed, agree on the general principles that we have derived from the analysis of the public comment, and then dive into a substantive discussion on the major questions that we took away after having consulted with the community. So I would like to pause a moment, and you know, even though it's very early in the morning, can we just give a round of applause to the hardworking rapporteurs and the individuals on the working party? So I'm still trying to find out if and when we can have the Adobe room maybe displayed up here. And maybe staff could bring up the mind map from the Frankfurt meeting. You know, obviously, what I think is a true statement to make is that we got quite some support from the community with what we're doing. Still, there's a lot of work to be done. But I guess it's you know, before we go into the detailed responses prepared by the rapporteurs, we should take pride in what we've done so far. You know, we couldn't take for granted that what we have previously agreed on would get such positive feedback. And I think we should convey that throughout the week. You know, there are questions. We received a lot of questions from the board and from others. And those questions need our attention, and we need to explain what we're doing, because we're in the subject so deep as we can't anybody else in the community to be. So let's not only focus on what we still have to do, but let's focus on what we've achieved so far. And I know that Jonathan was quite eager to make a little statement with respect to this very mind map. So Jonathan, I'm more than happy to give you the floor for that.
Yes, good morning, everyone. Jonathan Zook, ACT for the record. I guess I have to say that I've been, as difficult as the process has been, I've been very excited by this whole process, because I think that it has afforded us an opportunity to really take ICANN to the next step, in a way, and that the whole announcement by NTIA, whatever its motivation was, the politics behind it, I think is really inconsequential to the opportunity that it has presented us with. And I think that's the thing about which I've been most excited. I think sometimes when we're frustrated with the board, for example, we fail to look at our own responsibility in delivering the wrong kinds of work to the board. By failing to reach consensus ourselves, we end up turning the board into an arbiter, and then we end up lobbying the board instead of continuing to negotiate with each other and finding consensus, and thereby minimizing the role of the board. Right, and so we need to take some responsibility. And so one of the most exciting things about this entire process was the level of consensus that we brought to the table when this transition was announced, that we needed to do this accountability process, and we were all speaking with one voice, and that gave me chills, right? Because we spend so much time fighting about things in the normal course of operations, but on this we came together and spoke with one voice, and that was so powerful. And when we were going through this process early on of trying to figure out what would be the ideal expression of the kind of empowerment we wanted for the community, what would that mean in reality, what kind of powers, where does the community have interest versus things that the board ought to just be doing on its own for its fiduciary responsibility, again, there was this consensus around it, and that was exciting. Right, there was this. No one is shaking their head and wondering, why are we going through this process? There's a universal recognition that there's another stage to which the organization needs to get. And I think that's reflected in the public comments as well. When they were looking at the bylaws changes, when they were looking at the notion of fundamental bylaws, when they were looking at changes to the mechanisms for redress and reconsideration, and when they were looking at the fundamental powers that we wanted to imbue the community with, there was almost complete consensus. There's little bits of fussing here and there about details, et cetera, but if you look at the comments as a whole, the community as a whole agreed with us about, you know, what it is we wanted to accomplish. You know, this is very American kind of reference, and I apologize, but, you know, when President Kennedy said, we're going to put a man on the moon, it was this very aspirational thing, and no one had any idea how to go about doing it. But it began with a universal aspiration, and then a bunch of really smart people were tasked with trying to actually bring that about. And I feel like that we have similar aspirations here, which is to turn this into a more mature and therefore more hardened organization against capture and all the other things that we fear, right? That maturation is so essential to ICANN's next phase and its, you know, next 16 years of life. And so I'm very excited that we're engaged in this process, very excited that down the line, in terms of what we aspire to do, there's almost complete consensus in the community. And I think that's what's most exciting. So let's figure out the details. Let's figure out how to actually put a man on the moon. But I think it's so incredibly exciting that we all agree that that's what we're setting out to do.
Here.
Yep.
Jonathan. I think that, you know, nicely sets the tone for our discussion. And this is going to be a long week. We're going to have a lot of interesting and engaged conversations, I guess, both inside this group as well as with the wider community. And just because I think everybody is interested in that, we will have discussions how we're going to prep for the community engagement. That will take place later this afternoon. As you will have seen, there is a session on Sunday, as well as there is a lot more community engagement. There has been a blog post published by Larry Strickling. So we're going to discuss that because we think that we need to sort of have an answer as a group that we can convey, because certainly Larry's blog post has gotten a lot of attention. With respect to the session on Sunday, there have been some questions for us as co-chairs because we are participating in that session, and we would like to just clarify that when the request came for us to join the session on Sunday, it was announced as a session on the history of accountability in ICANN. So at that time, and it's unfortunate that it hasn't been added to the calendar of events, which I'm sure staff will do, at the time we were not aware of the blog post nor of Larry's participation in that session. So we thought we would just update the group at the outset of this week on where we are, to then, you know, facilitate the entry into the town hall discussion that we have on Monday. So it's likely that the discussion on Sunday will be characterized by the blog post, and just rest assured that we will discuss with you what messages to convey in that discussion. So we're not going to do that ourselves, but we're going to work on that this afternoon. Also, this morning, what we're going to do is we're going to hear from the rapporteurs specifically on how we analyze the public comments, and hopefully we will get agreement on the next steps that need to be taken by the sub-teams again, so that we can then take stock and say what the major questions are that we as a group should be discussing in the sessions throughout the week. After having done that, we think that it's very likely that we will need to have an in-depth discussion of the various proposals and the various models on the table. Just to be sure, our report specified a reference model, but the reference model wasn't a done deal. We've made very clear that this is the current status of our deliberations. Since we received public comment, and since all of us have put some more thought into this, since we've all engaged with our peers and our groups that we're representing, we are now in a much better position to reopen that conversation. And as you will remember in our last phone call, we have suggested that individuals that are in favor of a specific model should take the opportunity here to present what their ideal vision of a model for implementation of the community powers would be. So I would like to encourage those that want to speak to just raise their hand. It's going to be a 5-minute sales pitch, more or less, for the model, where, you know, don't talk about concerns that you have. Don't talk about negative aspects with other models that you see. Present the model that you would like to see implemented in ICANN in the best possible fashion to convince the whole group that your model is the way to do it. Right? So we're going to have 5-minute interventions from all those that want to speak. We're going to have no questions, except for questions for understanding, if something is unclear maybe. But we're going to hear all the presentations one by one, so that they stand for themselves, that they are not mitigated by concerns or difficult questions. And after we've heard all the implementation models, we're going to discuss them. Right? And this discussion is likely going to take place in the afternoon. So by the time we break for lunch, we would have liked to conclude the two items mentioned, i.e. analysis of the public comments. Number two, listening to all the presentations / sales pitches, 5-minute elevator pitches for the different models. So can I please get a show of hands of those that want to take the opportunity to present their ideal implementation of the new accountability infrastructure. Alan is number one. Sebastian, you had already volunteered in the call. Yeah. Becky. Aubrey. So we're going to hear you in the order that we're just noting. So we're not going to rearrange that, right? So there's no priority in the order of speakers. Jordan? Don't be afraid of maybe duplicating Greg, duplicating with variations of what others had said. Sam? We want to get unfiltered, ideal visions of where to go. Because I think we need to get all, we need to understand the best of all worlds, and then this afternoon go and discuss the models, flesh out all the pros and cons, and try to take stock of what common ground is to then get into a creative phase of designing something that everybody can live with. But it is our impression as co-chairs that in calls and with written communication, we might not be able to fully grasp the idea and the benefits of the different models that are suggested. So, should one or the other of you decide to chime in, please don't be shy, approach us, but for the time being, I think we have six or seven speakers that we're going to hear. Maybe you can just read out the list.
Here's the list I have, because I think I missed Jordan, and I don't know where he is. So I have Alan, Sebastian, Becky, Avery, Sam, Jordan. I don't know at what point you appeared in this list. After Sam? After Avery. And anyone else I forgot?
Greg
was somehow in the list at the end. Last. It's going to be, so in terms of timing, we're thinking 3 minutes, 5 minutes maximum each. And we'll be holding the clock. So just so you can prepare.
Okay, there's a queue forming. We're going to hear the queue, but maybe I can ask Becky to join us here to be the first one to present the outcome of the report. Sebastian, please.
About the last topic, may I suggest that you organize a draw and not take this list like that? May I suggest, and then you can disagree, but the why, it's I don't think either I am the first one, as I was already candidate since 1 week, either I am somewhere else, but it's not the way you are doing it. And my suggestion is to do a draw. The second point, and I would like to ask my colleagues, member of this group, if I heard well the list of people, I would like very much that new voice came and to express their proposal and their concern. It's too much, and I am sorry for the one who will talk, too much oriented with the same people coming from the same place, and we need diversity, and diversity must come from the participant, and I hope that it's not because somebody told you that you need to do a sales pitch that you can't talk, and because it will be in English that it will be a barrier in entering this discussion. My second point is that it seems to be that everything is going well, then maybe we can finish the meeting now because everything is good. I am not sure that this is a case. We have a lot of talk and discussion to have and find a consensus. It's not because people will say again and again, we have done our best and that's where we are today. We have not a consensus document, we have a document, and the discussion need to be going around the discussion. My last point, during the previous meeting I asked for call for confirming or asking for new chair or how you call leaders of the working groups, and I was hoping that you will be at the same time reopening the membership of those groups. It didn't happen. It's a bit difficult when you enter a new phase that the possibility of entry is not again and granted for everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Sebastian. With respect to the last point, membership certainly is open for sub-teams or, you know, for the group as such. So this is not a closed club. With respect to the leadership team, certainly we are always eager to hear volunteers that want to take a more active role. But it is my understanding that the current group of co-chairs and rapporteurs is willing to stay on and continue with the challenge ahead. And that is also to say that we are certainly cognizant that there is a lot of work to be done, and certainly we're not yet there, but we shouldn't forget where we came from. And had you asked me whether we would get thus far, like 6 months ago, I think I would have been optimistic in public and crying at home. No, I think we are, and we will see when we hear the reports from the rapporteurs that there are certainly issues and very fundamental issues that we still have to resolve. But if you look at where we came from and what we have, what we've done, and the level of support for the general ideas, for the general architecture that we've suggested, I think that's more or less overwhelming. And I wouldn't have expected that level of backing from the community so far. With respect to new voices that we would like to hear, I think there is full consensus on that. So, again, let me extend the invitation to those that are not yet on the list to make themselves heard and speak up, present their models, and you're certainly more than welcome. It doesn't only go for the ones that are present in this room, but certainly also for the remote participants. There was another hand up from Wolfgang.
Yes, but discussion moved in a different direction. I wanted just to make a brief comment to Jonathan and to react to one point. Can I do it? Okay. Yes, Jonathan, I see the, you know, same very positive development, and I make this statement as a member of the community and as an individual member of the board. And I compare this with the big reform process we had after 2001 and 2002 and 2003. If you compare this reform process was much less transparent, much less open. This was really a top-down process. The community was more or less excluded when, you know, a small number of mainly board members created the GNSO and the CNSO and, you know, abolished the PSNO. All this was more or less behind closed doors, and you have to see these differences, and you have to see how far we have gone with this ICANN. It's not yet perfect, but, you know, and we have to move forward. But I think we have to realize that we are on the right track. We are moving forward. We have still a long way to go. But, you know, one final point I want to make, because you said we are lobbying the board, and the board is this and that. The board is part of the community. So the members of I was a chair of the nomination committee. The nomination committee is composed by members of the community. So the community itself elects its leaders and sends them to the board. And it's a difference. I myself made the experiences. If you are a member of the GNSO and you're fighting for a special constituency, or if you have to fair responsibility for ICANN as a whole. Insofar, you know, the role of a board member is certainly different from other members of the community. But I think one thing should be really clear. The board is part of the community, and the individual member of the board are also part of the community. It would be not good to have the community here and the board there. So we are sitting in the same boat. Thank you.
Thanks, Wolfgang. Alan.
Thank you. With regard to speaking order, if Sebastian had his hand up a week ago, then he should be before me, and I don't see any real need to do anything as far as a draw. If flipping that order fixes that. I'm a little confused as to when these things are happening. The agenda we have for the meeting is many sections of drafting response to the public. I don't know when these sales pitches, by the way, I find that term offensive, are going to happen, nor the reports on the from the rapporteurs. Can we have just a little clarity about what we're doing today, or at least what order those items are going in? Thank you.
Yes, Alan. The point that was on the agenda just before lunch break is the one where we're going to have these presentations of different models and perspectives. Okay? Does that clarify?
Okay, with that we can...
It doesn't quite sound like a debate to me, but yes, thank you.
No, it's not meant to be a debate.
Okay, unless there are more questions on how we're going to proceed this morning, I think we can now dive into substance of the response to the public comment report. Becky, you are the first.
Thank you very much, and I want to thank all of the people in Work Party 2 who worked so hard to put these documents together. It was an enormous amount of work. We started from the premise that we didn't want to get directly to, you know, sort of summarizing. We really wanted to go through the comments one by one and identify the major issues that came out of them, including any new issues that came out of it. So you will see in the WP2 work stream, the format is a little bit different than the tool, and it is designed specifically to get the themes out on the table, the themes that were identified. As a beginning point, I think that there was general support for clarifying the mission, articulating commitments and core values in a clear way, and creating fundamental bylaws. A couple of topics emerged where we're going to have to do some thinking and refining. One was the sort of concept of defined powers, ICANN's powers being defined, and those that are not in the enumerated or listed are not ICANN's powers. There were some questions and from a number of commenters about human rights issues, and so we have a subgroup working on specifically analyzing the comments and coming up with some proposals on the general notion that ICANN's commitments and core values should include preservation of a variety of human rights. There were some issues with some suggestions that contract compliance should be part of the defined powers. There were quite a lot of comments on the balancing core values test that is proposed in the language, and I think that is something that will need further work. That's an open issue for us. There were, and I think that was a substantive issue that we're going to need to address. This is just the change from the test that is in the current bylaws about balancing core values with each other, with the proposed new language. So that is, I would identify that as one substantive work stream, along with the understanding of the human rights proposals that are there. We got quite a few comments on the language that is included and has been included in the bylaws since day one, which is the private sector led. And some, people suggesting clarification that this term has always meant non-government as opposed to commercial or anything like that. So that is something I think that is clearly intended, but we need to see if we need that. Agreement on the general commitments and core values, except that there was a significant amount of discussion in the comments about the way the consumer choice and competition core values are phrased, and that's another area where I think we need to put our sharpen our pencils. Strong support for the language regarding multi-stakeholderism that's in there. Request that we think more clearly about public good and public interest concepts that are in there. You will maybe recall that we had basically in a couple of these tried to, in one place, suggest that, you know, multi-stakeholderism is a critical piece of identifying what the public, the global public interest is. And there were some requests for clarification on that. We got a couple of comments on idea on things that were missing, and a couple of comments on other ideas that were included, and we'll sort of have those summarized. But as I said, I think that the critical issues from the mission and core values discussion is making sure that we get the balancing right, talking about whether the defined powers are sufficiently inclusive when it comes to human rights issues, and then some the in particular the competition issue. Now, obviously, that's not completely comprehensive; just meant to be a high-level summary. Of that. In terms of the notion of having fundamental bylaws, there are a couple of major themes appeared in the discussion. There was strong support for having fundamental bylaws. There was pretty strong support for the bylaws that we have identified or proposed to identify as fundamental, although not, you know, there were clearly some suggestions about thinking about other bylaws in that category. Requests for sort of clarification on who can change the fundamental bylaws and how they might be changed, and I think that that's something that we necessarily will be getting into. Obviously, there was some question about is the wording in the language sufficiently flexible to meet ICANN's needs? Questions about whether that we've included properly accounted for the IANA reviews provisions coming out of the CWG. And then finally, there was quite a bit of discussion about the what the ICANN's place of incorporation and headquarters should be, and on both sides of that issue, there were opinions as to whether it should or should not be a fundamental bylaw, and what the position we should be taking, given that it's sort of in work stream two as opposed to work stream one on this. Again, I don't think that there are any irreconcilable differences in the comments that we received there, but of course, an overarching topic of interest for this group is the headquarters issue. The independent review, we got quite a lot of comments on this. General support from for the concept that the outcomes of this should be binding. General support for the concept that the community should have the ability to bring on, you know, in appropriately balanced situations, to bring independent review, appropriate support for the kinds of funding proposals that we've suggested to make this more accessible, support for the concept of a standing panel, although there were comments about whether the size that we've proposed is correct or whether it is adequate for the number of independent reviews that are going on. Some important questions were raised by governments with respect to independent review, and I think we will have to address those. I had sort of forgotten, but I am pretty sure it's the case that governments have trouble agreeing to be bound by binding arbitration, and the government of France raised that. I think that is a completely legitimate point that we have to deal with. As I recall from my days in the U.S. government also couldn't agree to be bound by binding arbitration. There are a couple of sort of disruptive proposals in terms of really thinking more closely about focusing, focusing down tighter on the mission as the focus of what can be in the independent review. Let me just go through it. I think that there were quite a few comments on the diversity issue and a desire to strengthen the commitment with respect to how we ensure that the panel is diverse. You look confused, Suzanne. Are you confused? The only other question I want to point focus on is something I think that we need to explain to the community better is how a panel that is a standing panel that is compensated by ICANN can be independent. And I think that part of that is just a discussion, but there were people who thought that having this standing panel and having it compensated by ICANN would compromise the independence, so we have to make sure that we have thought carefully through the independence safeguards that are in there, because on the one hand there was strong support for the standing committee, on the other hand there was concern about independence. So those two things interplay, and I think that will be someplace we want to work to selection. Yes. There were quite a few comments on the different selection proposals that are out there. Okay, going on to reconsideration. Several themes emerged. One was what's the role of the ombudsman in the reconsideration process? How you deal with the board reviewing its own actions, and whether that there were conflict of interest issues, whether there should be some rules that said that board members who had participated in one decision shouldn't be on the panel reviewing. I think it's that discussion, if my own personal opinion, is a byproduct of the new GTLD. The nature of the new GTLD policy committee and reconsideration going to that, and whether there was some mechanism outside of that. I think there's some, the ombudsman has issued a report recently on that. There were a number of suggestions about the standard of review and standing, questions for suggestions to both expand the filing deadline, to decrease the decision timeline. Then there were quite a number of comments on transparency in the reconsideration process, whether the document release policy is adequate, and the need for more documentation with respect to dismissal by the in this case it was by the Board Governance Committee in the reconsideration comments. Are there general comments about avoiding frivolous and vexation reconsideration requests and dealing with, as we will, I think, have to deal with in both the independent review and the reconsideration, sort of blocking and nuisance filings and abuse of the process? So that's, again, I think there's some more work to be done on the reconsideration issue. There's also a question of sort of understanding what the reconsideration is and what the limits are, and I mean, it is the board reconsidering its own actions. Some people have suggested that there's a need for an intermediate process that is not the board reconsidering its own actions, although I think that's something that we will be talking about in the independent review in terms of reform of the constructive engagement or whatever it's called process. My report.
Are there any questions for Becky? So obviously, Becky, you've done a sterling job in summarizing and responding to the public comments. I guess the question for this group is what we do as a next step. And it is our impression that the reports we got on IRP and reconsideration are such that speak to details of the implementation of the two. So we are inclined to actually take this to the next level. You will remember that we've discussed the idea of an iterative consensus finding. So we think that this is one of the areas, IRP and reconsideration, where we could do a consensus call of what we have and establish a sub-team on working on an implementation. So let me just throw this out there and hear your views on this. You know, we really need to make sure that we document progress on the basis of what we've got, but we found the level of support from the community very encouraging. Certainly there need to be details to be fleshed out more, but I think we should try to take stock of what we have and take it to the next level, and the next level would actually be taking this to the implementation stage.
Just a quick addition. The intent is not to make any consensus call right now. It's just throwing the idea around that we think the maturity of the community feedback we're getting would enable to go one step further, and that's something we'll have to consider in our further deliberations this week, and of course welcoming any initial comments on that assessment, but it's pretty good to be seeing that the list of open issues which are still to be dealt with within our group and which we'll need to build some consensus on are a handful of them on very substantial proposals. So it's a very good thing. Paul
so
was raising up.
Queue forming, Cavus was first and then Paul. Yeah, please go ahead.
Buenos dias, todos los amigos. Good morning, everybody. I think even though we need not to make big changes, we need to see whether there are some fundamental questions which could be at least softened or clarified. And if there is any problems, perhaps the possibility to resolve the problems. As I have read, to the extent that I was able to read, still there are some issues about the binding nature. Still there are issues about number of the panel. Still there are issues about the way they are selected in the short list, or the entities select them in a short list, i.e. ICANN, and the issue of divergency from the geographical location point of view. In that category, the binding nature is the first one, the second in number, the third one is the way they are selected, and geographical distributions. And there was one comment about the reason why international arbitrators are there. Some comments to see whether we can reply, whether we can soften, or whether we can remove that. But that is one of the main issues, not only for the CCWG, but it has direct impact on CWG, and it has direct, indirect impact on the activities of ICG that we discussed yesterday in detail. So I don't go further than that one, and I'll just leave it to you to see to what extent these views are shared. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Cavus. That's well noted. Let's hear Paul now.
Thanks for that, and I'd like to congratulate everybody who's been involved in the working party, particularly for this session we've heard from Becky. I've got one general observation for today's discussions, and it has a subset relationship to the independent review panel, and because you're talking about moving to implementation discussions, I feel I should raise it now because I wonder whether it's the right time for implementation. It really comes around to the feedback you receive, Becky, about diversity of the members of the IRP. And if I can just make my sort of more general observation, if I may, in our consideration around ICANN accountability. One of the challenges I think all of the international multi-stakeholder bodies have is that they inherently come from a regional technical community background and then reflect the certain values that emerged out of that and the people who are participating in it. And also, for that matter, the cultural comfort of debating in English in a pretty robust sort of way. The consequence of that, if you look at it in terms of board participation in all the multi-stakeholder bodies, etc., is that we have a big predominance of North Americans, well, frankly, a big predominance of Anglo-Saxons and Northern Europeans. And if we look around the room today, with one or two exceptions, we have that same combination. When one starts to look at the accountability of ICANN and some of the models we're talking about, when you talk about sort of basically nominees from community members being the ultimate power, again, I worry about what it looks like is the same. I'm going to use a term just to sort of be a bit provocative. The same cabal of an activist group from North America and Europe. Now, I make that point partly because I spend a lot of time in China at the moment. And if you look at this from the perspective of the country with the largest number of internet users in the world, this thing doesn't look international. Now, I've got lots of criticisms of Chinese participation and trying to engage more Chinese people to participate. We could talk about that as well. So my real question, I'm raising one issue for us to consider generally in terms of the model of accountability around the board, which we'll come to later today. But the first part of my question to Becky is this issue of looking sufficiently international, particularly for communities or for people who are not naturally going to participate in these sorts of models but have to be more invited to participate. How do you see that issue in terms of the feedback, and have we thought about that sufficiently to be ready to go forward for planning implementation?
So you are quite correct that the diversity of the panel was a major substantive issue. And I hope I noted that going in, but that is clearly something that people had strong feelings about. There were some comments that to the effect that it's hard to achieve and there needs to be flexibility. I think there were more comments to the effect that we had to ensure ultimately that we did have the kind of diversity that would make people feel comfortable actually using the tool on the notion that there were arbitrators available to participate on the panel that would understand where they were coming from, both culturally and from a business perspective and all of those things. So I think on balance, the thrust of the comments was to go to a more mandated diversity than aspirational diversity. I totally agree that that is not something that we'll get necessarily by issuing a request for expressions of interest, that we will have to affirmatively go out and seek out these people. Now, there is no doubt in my mind that there are people with the skill sets we need in every part of the world, but it will be a critical task to go out and affirmatively engage those people and bring them into the process and ensure that they're available. And just on this point, I think that the diversity actually goes to the legitimacy of the process, and we can't miss that. It's if the people who have, you know, who need to use this tool don't feel that their perspectives are going to be understood by the panel, it's not going to be legitimate. So, I think that is implementation in terms of the how you go out and actually identify those people and bring them in. And I think that the balance of the comments are very strongly in favor of doing everything we can to ensure that there is the diversity. So from a consensus perspective, I would say that that is something that emerged, that the focus on diversity has to be very real and very concrete and very outcome-oriented.
Mr. Chairman, just to say that if that was then included in implementation, if that proactive approach was included in implementation, I would be comfortable with your proposition of moving forward with IRP for implementation planning.
Thanks, Paul. I guess that's an excellent suggestion. I think there is huge agreement on the need for diversity. The devil is in the detail on how you achieve it. But I think that I've seen nobody disputing the fact that we need to make the request for diversity more robust. But if we make that part of the plan for the implementation, I think we would be good to go. So it needs to be there as a feature, as well as the points that Cavus thankfully raised. So all these remaining questions are not being swept under the carpet, but they're on the plate once we refine and flesh out for operationalizing this. Again, we're not going to make a discussion today. We have two more speakers in the queue. After those speakers, I'd like to end the queue and move on to the next subject. First is Greg, please.
Thanks, Greg Shatton, for the record. First, I'd like to note that's the first time in my life I've been referred to as an Anglo-Saxon. My Bubba and Zeta would be so proud. Secondly, I think that we shouldn't get too hung up on the term implementation. As an active member of the policy and implementation working group, I encourage us not to. I think what's important in talking about consensus is trying to gather where we are up to a point and come to consensus we're at that point and then work on things that are beyond that point and not go back again over the things that we've agreed to. So it's essentially, I look at it as putting a stake in the ground that says we've gotten to this point and the work we'll do from this point on is based on what's taken place before. Whether we call that next level of work implementation or not, I think is beside the point, but we know that in this community, the word implementation can cause an entire group of people to get together weekly for 14 months. So let's not have that happen. Lastly, if we are listing things that need to be dealt with on the IRP point, I'll just briefly mention that the issue of, I hate to use another word that will cause us to talk, enforceability, you know, is whether an IRP is enforceable in court and whether there perhaps are some IRPs that are and some that aren't. That was a subject of a discussion between Malcolm Huddy and myself and some others, which has not yet been certified to our counsel for discussion, and our counsel, I know, outside counsel, are being very judicious in making sure that they don't jump the gun on questions, no matter how interesting they may be. Thanks.
Steve.
Yeah, thank you. Becky, with respect to the questions about IRP and reconsideration, I too felt like we were on the right track, but the comments that came in, the questions, the impact testing that came in from the board last night contains an additional 23 questions on the IRP, 9 additional questions on the reconsideration request. And most of the questions are loaded with presumptions of significant concern about potentially bad things that could happen, costs that could be incurred, compromising the board's fiduciary duties. And they're loaded with careful legal analysis that we've seen before from ICANN Legal. I mean, so it's undoubtedly a lot of work went into that and a lot of preparation. And it's unfortunate that it arrived just after we'd done the work of going through this, because we're going to need to practically start over on IRP and reconsideration, as an example, to cover those 30 questions. I really would encourage ICANN Legal, who composed the questions, to share with us what their view would be, because I have a feeling that of those questions, ICANN Legal probably has an answer in mind. But not only what they believe we should do.
We can't guess what it is?
Yeah, we can guess. And they're very thoughtful questions. I'm not being critical of what the questions are, but I believe that introducing them as they have after we've analyzed public comments puts us at significant risk of prolonging the date by which we're going to get our second round out. And playing ping pong or tennis with ICANN Legal is not going to be a game any of us are going to enjoy. It's far better for us to ask them to put those cards on the table, tell us what answers they have in mind or what solution they would want to do. Does the board have a view as to what it thinks the IRP should look like? I mean, is there a parallel process where the board already knows what it thinks the improvements are? Let's not play this game back and forth. Let's hear that now and have an explanation that we can then shape into our second draft for public comment. And so I appreciate all the work that went into that, but I'm absolutely positive there's more than meets the eye in those questions. Show us the rest of it.
Thanks, Steve. I'd like to make 2 points before moving to Chris, who has raised his hand. One on policy and implementation that Greg mentioned. So this is sort of an advertisement for the GNSO Council session, because we have the report from the policy and implementation group, so if you're interested in that subject. And I'd like to point out that when the policy / implementation work in the GNSO Council or in the working group started, it was tagged policy versus implementation. Now we're saying policy and implementation. So these go hand in hand. And as we've previously said, even when we start operationalizing our recommendations, not to use the word implementation, we still need oversight from our group to ensure that the operationalization is done in the spirit of our recommendations. So I think this can be taken for granted. But at the same time, you know, we need to make a determination as a group at what point in time we hand the task over for a different resource to be fleshing out all the details to make it work, right? And that's why we are asking the group to consider capturing what we have as consensus, to then put it in the hands of experts or other team to be working on to operationalize. When it comes to the questions from the board, and it's a little bit unfortunate that Bruce Tonkin, who is our board liaison, is not with us today, but I have very vivid memory of what Wolfgang just said, the board being part of the community. So if the board takes the liberty of sending us a long list of questions after the close of the public comment period, that begs the question of why the board, if it feels so much as being part of the community, requests or demands this special treatment. So I think I'd like to have an answer. Maybe Chris can enlighten us on why we... You know, I'm just speaking my personal capacity now, but, you know, we have discussed the process. We have discussed stages to be further advance for the Dublin meeting. And with these lot of questions coming in late, we actually need to revisit a lot of things that we've thought we could close during this meeting. And I find this unfortunate, to say the least. Chris.
Well, thank you for setting that up so nicely so that I can so that I can respond. I'm frankly amazed. We said in our public comment that we would be sending a list of questions that would go to an impact analysis that we thought would be being done by the CCWG. I can also tell you categorically that there is no hidden document here. The board doesn't have answers to the questions. The board only saw the questions itself a couple of days ago so that we could check through them and make sure that we were comfortable asking them in the first place. I apologize if you think that us sending them is some sort of breach of process, but actually we're trying to be, and I'm speaking as a board member now as opposed to personally, trying to be helpful and provide a list of questions that we think are important. And if you're seriously suggesting that had we provided those questions 2 weeks ago, in the public, as part of the public comment, you know, that is a point that you want to raise and nut out in this group. We said in our public comment we're working on a series. We think you should do an impact analysis of the recommendations that they end up. And by the way, we're working on some questions. And in fact, on the list, a couple of people posted saying, we note that the board has said that we're going to be sending some questions. Hope they'll come soon, which is exactly what we've done. So if you want to ignore them, go ahead, ignore them. But frankly, they are intended to be helpful. They are certainly not, and I resent the characterization, which I may have misunderstood, but it sounded pretty much to me like a characterization, that there is some hidden agenda here, and that, of course, we've already got the answers, and we know what shape we'd like the IRP to be in. Frankly, that is, to use a quaint English term, bollocks. We have absolutely no clue. We are part of this process as a board, and I'm more than happy to formally apologize on behalf of the board if you genuinely believe that by not sending these comments, these questions as part of the public comment period, that that's in some way offensive or intended to derail the process. It is not. And quite frankly, the sooner we all of us stop drawing a dividing line between the board as this strange ogre that sits in a closed room and is out to get us all as a community, and acknowledge that the board is just as much a part of this community as the rest of us are. I'm put onto this board as a representative of the CCNSO, and I spend most of my time working with my colleagues in the CCTLD community to ensure that their interests are looked after on the board, despite the fact that everybody seems to think that I'm not allowed to do that because I'm supposed to look after the corporation. So I'm sorry if I'm going on too long, but I'm actually personally offended that you would imagine that I, amongst my board and the rest of my board colleagues, would have got some kind of weird hidden agenda going on here to try and force an outcome that we think is the right outcome. That is not correct, and we're trying to be as helpful as we can as a board, never mind about as individuals. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Maybe a minor point of clarification. I was not asking for an apology, but for clarification. You were saying you, so I think you will not have heard from me any allegation or suspicion of conspiracy, but you might wish to check the
I was talking to the room, Thomas, not to you.
But I would suggest that we do discuss how we best go about with this in the session that we're going to have with the board. I think that's the right place for us to have that discussion, and certainly it is not our intention, I guess not the intention of the CCWG as such, to ignore the questions that you raised, but we're going to work on them. Mathieu, you wanted to add to that?
No, just very much in line with what you said. It is no intention to ignore any set of input from anyone in the community, nor give any privileged treatment to any of the contributions from the community. However, I think part of the reaction is based on the sheer number of questions. There are 88 questions in a 10-page document. All are open questions, while we were asking for feedback regarding our proposals. And so that puts us in a very difficult situation in terms of timing of how we plan to address this. So I would very much welcome, and we'll have this discussion further, to discuss with the group how we interact with the board about how how we, I mean, the kind of interactions we can have in a productive manner and in a manner that does not create any further delay or undue burden either on the volunteers or on Anken fees. I mean, imagine if we forwarded these questions to the legal advisors, I can tell you we're taking about millions. So that's the kind of concern I think we have, and we need to clarify this with the board in the later session, probably on
Matthew,
Sunday.
Matthew, can I try and just to help you, can I just say this? I don't think that these are intended to be a series of questions from the board that say, the board says you answer these questions to our satisfaction. The intention here is for us to simply say to you, have you asked these questions? Do you think you should consider these? If you decide not to, or you think that some of them are irrelevant, or you don't think, you know, whatever, that's fine. But all it was a sincere attempt to say, have you looked at it from this point of view? And what do you think the responses are? So it's not about getting legal advice. It's not about etc. It's an attempt to say, have you looked at it in these particular ways? So I won't say any more about it, and I'll happily discuss it when we meet the board and the CCWG mates. But if there's anything I can do, and I'm sure I speak for my fellow board members, to help in any way to clarify what we said and why we said it, happy to do that.
Thanks, Chris. There are a couple of hands raised that I assume are from individuals that want to speak to this very question. You will remember that I had closed the queue. I think that for this agenda item, we're trying to discuss the outcome of the public comment period. Can I ask for your permission to have this discussion when we meet the board? Is that okay? So I would really like us not to be sidetracked now with this board CCWG interaction, but focus on the response to the public comments. Not happy with that approach, Steve? Then I'm afraid we have to go through the queue. Some of you have thankfully lowered your hands, but then let's hear Alan Cavus had raised his hand, and Steve. And if I could ask you to keep it brief, please.
My comment is very brief. Just to call a clarification, what I heard was not that we that people think the board has answers to these questions, but the words were, I believe, that they believe ICANN Legal may already have some suggested answers, and if so, they should be shared.
Thanks. Alan Cavus?
Thomas, could you kindly clarify, you are deciding to raise these questions to the board to get answer from them? What is the issue of the board getting answer from the board or from the legal part of the board and the participation of the board in public comment? You are raising several questions that are independent from each other. What is your next action proposing with respect to this summary document of comments in regard with the board?
With respect to the board, we should have a discussion with the board. We have a session scheduled, and we will bring their list of questions up when we meet with them. But I would suggest that this group continues discussing the achievements of the sub-teams in analyzing public comment, and we are not going to focus on the board questions now. But we will do that in the discussions with the board and separately as a CCWG or sub-teams. Steve.
Thank you. Steve Delbiaco, just a quick follow-up. Chris, there was never any implication of hidden agenda, but there is certainly, in these questions, further concerns when the board document, when ICANN Legal asks, have you considered, et cetera, et cetera. More than likely, ICANN Legal has considered it, and I would love to learn what the rest of their considerations are, and there are going to be several questions where I would turn to ICANN Legal, who wrote the document, and say, what do you think is the right path? Because what you said earlier, Chris, is that you just saw the questions. So it's abundantly clear the board didn't write these questions. ICANN Legal did. These are employees of the corporation, and the board has a fiduciary duty to the corporation as well as duties to the community. But in this case, the board is stamped ICANN Legal's questions and called them the board's questions. That's your prerogative to do that. I understand, and perhaps the board added a little something to it. But it does create something we've talked about over and over again, is the difference between, I mean, Wolfgang talked about the board is the community. Well, in this case, I don't really think it is. In this case, the board stamped the corporation's legal department's questions and said they're the board's questions.
And what's the problem?
So I don't know why we would then probe. It's not a problem. It's just that we don't really, it wouldn't be productive to have that dialogue with the board over these questions. The board didn't write these questions. ICANN Legal did. They're in the room. They're here all week. We could have some rather productive sit-down sessions with ICANN Legal and the individuals who wrote it, and I believe we'll learn a lot more then than we will in asking the board. The board is in between the community and the corporation and has split duties, but it's ICANN Legal whose questions are in front of us now. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. I saw that more of you have raised hands. We really have to draw a line here. Let's discuss this when we meet the board. I think that's an important discussion to have with them on process as well as on substance. I would like to invite Jordan to the table. And the next session, the next part of the session is going to be chaired by Leon.
Thank you very much, Thomas. So, Jordan, could you join us, please?
Thank you.
Yes. And thank you very much, Becky, for this update and the great work that the work party that you're leading has done. So, next, Jordan will provide us walk through what their working party has done with regards to public comment. So, Jordan, could you please?
Hopefully a little bit quicker than a walk, maybe a skip. On the screen, could we have the summary document that we did from Working Party 1? The first thing I'd like to do is publicly thank all the volunteers in Work Party 1 who did the actual analysis. I hope I don't miss anyone out, but Fiona and Matthew and Ruloff and Steve, did you do some? And Avery, and there are probably more volunteers. Yeah, Fiona. Thank you all for doing the analysis. The second thing is that the overall, at the very highest level, the community feedback was positive on the questions that we're going to work through. The third thing, digging into a little bit more detail, is that the responses on the community mechanism were confusing or complicated to draw out because of our failure to actually have all the questions on the web page until right at the end of the public consultation. And so I'm going to come back to the community mechanism thing where we did a more analytic take on the comments that was a little bit more like what Becky and the Work Party 2 team did. So if I come back to question 7, and if we just quickly sort of jaunt through questions 8 onwards, all I'm going to do is kind of talk at the headline and re-raise the main issue or issues that came up in the public feedback. So under the heading for question 8, is that what's in front of us? Can we scroll down to that one, Alice? Which was on the budget, rejection of the budget or strategic and operating plans. The kind of main theme that came through, if you like, was that this power, if it was going to be implemented, needed to be done in a way that didn't impact negatively on ICANN's operational effectiveness. And that people wanted to see amendments to the planning and budgeting process that meant that feedback was taken on board before these plans were finalized, so that it was less likely that they would be vetoed. Now, there are already extensive community input systems for the planning process. There are working parties, there are public comment periods, and so on. And we've identified, I think, as a workstream 2 issue, further improvements to those. So some of that feedback has already been taken into account. And I think there was sort of reasonably sort of favorable commentary here, and the concerns were not against the power, it was making it workable. So our responsibility, if you like, as a CCWG is to make sure that in the next draft of our proposal we've addressed those effectiveness concerns. If you scroll down to the power to reject changes to the standard bylaws, which is in front of you on the screen, which is good, the main issues or concerns that came up was the desire on some for more time for the community review process. There were quite a few comments along those lines. Once again, the impact on operational effectiveness if a bylaws change was implemented and then reversed by the community. On the time thing, I think when we do our next version of our report, it will be helpful to set out the whole flow of bylaws changes, because bylaws changes don't suddenly magically appear and then the community would only have 2 weeks as per this model to say no. They come at the end of quite an involved process and a 40-day public comment period. So if we set out the full picture of the process, it may be that people will see that they've already had weeks and weeks and weeks of consideration for any bylaws change, and that the chance at the end of the process to say it isn't supported can require less time. But it was a pretty solid view. So that analysis that I'm offering you might be wrong. It may be that we need to draw out the process. You know, some were suggesting 60 days, some were suggesting until the next ICANN meeting. So it's a topic for further discussion. If we can scroll down to the summary for question 10, the fundamental bylaws. People were, again, in favor of this, and the similar queries were on the impact on ICANN's operational effectiveness. It's a little bit hard to judge given that we don't have fundamental bylaws at the moment, but of the 22 comments, 21 were in favor broadly and 4 noted concerns. So those are set out for you to read. If we flick down to removing individual ICANN directors, once again, these are pretty favorable. The summary presented says that the main issues or concerns are dealing with the NOMCOM, and we know we need to deal with the NOMCOM removal process. And the other kind of theme that came through was that there needs to be some equality of process or treatment between the various SOs and ACs to make sure that some board members are not sort of uniquely exposed to removal, I guess, through lower thresholds. If we flick down to the next one on recalling the entire board, there was once again pretty high. So all of these powers had very high levels of support. High levels of support there, and there was a suggestion of a higher threshold for board removal. And that stands on its own as a comment. In terms of the AOC incorporation into the bylaws, once again, there was broad agreement to this. The main issues or concerns that came through here was the issue of the location of incorporation in the fundamental bylaws or not. The question of what happens to the AOC. So it's a bilateral agreement between the United States and ICANN. If we do proceed as recommended and as the public comments support, to incorporate these commitments into ICANN's bylaws and the reviews and so on, it may be time to go to a more sort of concrete proposal that the AOC itself should come to an end as part of the transition. And the third sort of theme that came through from Avery and Steve's summary of this was the composition of the various groups and how is full diversity of the community handled. And I'm pretty sure that that refers to the AOC reviews that are set out. So if we can go back up to the top, Alice, to the community mechanism. This was where the broadest set of comments came through. There is pretty broad support for most ingredients of the model that the CCWG proposed, and kind of fundamentally alternative proposals in terms of embodying the global multi-stakeholder community with this array of powers was not received. People generally support the direction. The comments do show the need for some clear decisions around enforceability. and what this model is that we're talking about. The word membership conjures up concerns in some parts of the community, and that's clear. So we did this as a kind of two-step. We did the analysis of the comments, and that was, I don't think it actually ended up making it into the document that was circulated in the same place, but the analysis of the comments was done along the lines that Working Party 2 did, and it's, please go and have a look at it on this. You know, it's available. It's important to sort of test out the analysis. In terms of the model that was presented broadly, people seemed to feel that the SOs and ACs was a reasonable representation of the community for embedding the accountability powers. Where people made comments about the question, membership was preferred as an approach to designators or to neither. So that came through quite clearly in the public comments. Concerns centered mainly on the implementation details of that model, and a range of concerns that we've talked about quite extensively were listed there at the bottom of the first page of the summary. And more detail was a reasonably common call here. In terms of the voting weights that we had proposed for the SOs and ACs, opinion was kind of split. You know, so about 10 people commented in favor of it, around 11 wanted changes. The changes, some were seeking more influence for the GNSO, and sometimes that was just more influence for the GNSO. Other times it was, the GNSO is broad and diverse, and so we need more representation to be able to reflect that diversity. And the other set of comments was a range of comments around the role of the GAC, ISAC, and SSAC, where the ISAC and SSAC do not want to be members, according to their comments. They wish to retain their advisory role and to have influence through the quality of their analysis and advice, not through casting votes or exercising these powers. And in one way, if we follow their wishes in this regard, it would mean that whatever the other array of SOs and ACs that end up with votes, our proposal says they would all have the same equality of influence, which is a point to note. If you look at the enforceability of community powers, it seemed to come through in the comments that people understood that a membership-based model would deliver enforceability. So that mirrors our own discussion. People understand, I think, that that model gives that power. This is where the responses and the comments were difficult to sort of count, if you like, because, you know, there was one count was 10 people explicitly saying that they have a preference for enforceable, 4 people clearly saying that they don't support them. There are, as Rulof has remarked, and I think it's there highlighted in yellow, there are a range of other comments around this or around the implementation of it, the membership model, that we need to come back and discuss. In terms of the actual mechanism itself, the idea of having a community mechanism, there was general support for that. And one point was that it still isn't clear, I think, in our minds or in the community's mind, whether what we're trying to do is to have an assembly that casts these votes where people deliberate, or whether it's simply weighted votes that the SOs and ACs do individually. So I think that's something that we need to tease out further. And there were, just I want to finally mention, some overall or general themes, and some of this stuff came through from our advisors that were part of this process. The importance of avoiding insider capture of ICANN or its accountability mechanisms. Whether the SOAC system is itself a broad enough linkage to the global multi-stakeholder community, or whether we need to take a more fundamental look at that. The need, and this didn't only come from states, though mostly it did, for effective government involvement in ICANN, especially on public policy matters, and not compromising this through the changes that we are proposing. The idea that, as well as linear accountability, so which creates our who watches the watchers issue, that there has to be some mutuality of accountability, that part of accountability is holding each other to account, asking questions, answering questions in public fora and stuff. And that's where the mutual accountability forum suggestion is worth picking up, because in the end, we have to watch each other, right? There's no oracle outside the ICANN system who we can just say, please solve this problem for us, at least in my opinion. There was a desire for courts to not be the arbiters of ICANN policy decisions, and I can't imagine there's anyone in the room who disagrees with that. And there were a number of comments about improving and safeguarding diversity of participation. And the last point I'll make, and I was only reflecting on this when I was cut off from email while in the plane, really, and not having the stuff flowing at you all the time, is that there's a need to, you know, be really, we've got to disentangle what the community's concerns are with ICANN's general work and how to improve that, so the policy-making processes and the substantive work of the ICANN system. And this kind of quite narrow and specified set of accountability processes. There's a lot of the comments that were made on those general themes, especially about the diversity stuff, are kind of supportive of ICANN improving its engagement with the internet community, broadly read, and making sure that it gets all of the input that it needs to do its policy job right. And it feels to me like that's a little bit beyond our remit. That's not our problem to solve. So it's helpful to just bear that in mind when you're reading some of the comments. That's kind of the quick run through of the summary, Leon. And you know, the material is there to read. And one of the things we'll need to decide is how to go about responding to it if we're doing anything in writing.
Thank you very much for this quick run through, Jordan, and thank you for all the work that the Working Party has done so far. I'd like to open the floor for questions or comments with regards to what we just heard from Jordan. I see that we already have a hand up by Steve Del Bianco. Is that an old hand or a new hand? All right, so are there any questions or comments with regards to what we just heard from Jordan? Caboose?
Thank you very much. Yesterday, we in ICG discussed the process which is before us, and one of the elements of that process is compilations of the proposals from the three operational communities, in particular the area of the CWG stewardship naming community. In that discussion, I and Kate Drazek submitted a very brief review of activities of CCWG, which might have impact on ICG activities, and we referred to the five areas that CWG asked CCWG to include the community empowerment with respect to that. When we came to various options for implementation of that, in particular the membership model, and the UA, there was a lot of questions raised, and we said that this issue is quite clear how to be implemented within each SO and AC. Until the time that this question is not properly answered, the output of the CWG would face difficult to be considered and included in the report of the ICG to IANA, or NTIA, not to ICANN, because we submit our
report directly to NTIA. So there's still a lot of questions, unanswered questions, about the membership model, about the designator model, about the unincorporated association, and about the independent review panels, which all these connected directly to the five areas that CWG wish to be empowered in order that the proposal that has been made with respect to the naming committee functions. So we too were entrusted or assigned to raise this issue with you in the course of today or some other days, possibly as soon as possible, in order to have a feedback to the ICG, and in fact a volunteer group was established to further enforce these connections. Still I and Keith Reisig are liaison, but we have few others helping us. So for us in ICG, the issue of membership model is not clear, and the issue of designator model is not clear, and also the new notions of voluntary model as well. So we need to have some clarification, and I saw here there were many questions about unincorporated association. Apart from that, in some particular AC, it might be difficult to take any of these approaches because of the nature of that particular AC. So the question was raised that if that AC would not wish to be member at all, could it continue to be a designator and exercise its power with respect to and in conjunction with the others who will be the member, and how it works? Do they need to have unincorporated association with them? And the last question was briefly discussed, that delegation of authority, that a particular AC delegates his authority to one or two or three persons within that AC. And from viewpoint of some entities in some of the AC, it may not be difficult to delegate that authority if it goes to the binding issue and if it goes to the court. These are the questions, but still the issue of the three models and unincorporated association is not clear. And in fact, if you remember, distinguished Loan, I have asked a tabular form. In that tabular form, all seven ACs and SO are on vertical side, and on horizontal side, we have various models, and we have various powers, and we want to know which of the AC and OC is able to exercise this power under each of these versions, being member, being designator, being voluntary member, and with respect to the six or seven areas. Previously, we had six areas, but now recently, implicitly, another area has been added to that. Apart from the bylaw too, apart from the budget and the strategic plan, and apart from the removal of the board, individual at work, they have another one, review of the AANA functions. That has been another area. So we would like have a picture, have a tabular form to see who, at what condition, and under what model is able to exercise what power. This is not clear, and until it's not clear, the ICG will be in a serious difficulty to include the report of the CWG into this combined or consolidated report, send it to the NTIA, and it has direct impact on our timing. And NTIA, like CCWG, wrote a letter to ICG and asking time for implementation, and at this time we have no idea about that. sorry, to making this, but that is a mission was given to us. And Keith could also confirm that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Caboose, for your comments. They are duly noted, and we will, of course, include the discussion in the agenda items for our working sessions during this week. And maybe, Jordan, would you want to add anything to that?
Just 2 points. I'm aware that the co-chairs are meeting with the ICG chair sometime in the next 5 or 6 days. The other point is that all of these aspects of unclarity come from the fact that we've had our only one public comment and we haven't kind of finalized our proposal yet. So all of those details have to be resolved and answered as part of the work that we are doing. So we will get there on it. Yes.
Thank you very much. Next to the queue, I have Paul.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm following on from my previous comment. First of all, Jordan, to you and all the colleagues who've worked on this, congratulations on what's been an intense piece of work. I take my hat off to all the effort that's gone on. I have been a participant, like many, overwhelmed by the number of emails, and at the beginning of this process have thought that what was emerging from my experience of the organisation and the community was somewhat natural. This was the sort of thing that would emerge. I have to say now I would just pose the following questions that worry me now increasingly, and they are they're unintended consequence questions. It strikes me, with all due respect to Larry and Fiona behind me, that over the last 15, 20 years, the community's view of accountability at some level with vis-a-vis the United States government was a series of American companies and more advanced civil society actors thinking that if they could, I'm exaggerating to make a point, if they couldn't get what they wanted in ICANN, they could always go to the US government or to the Congress and ask for, you know, at least some public form of accountability. It wouldn't necessarily get an answer, but there'd be some public way of going there. They at least felt there was a two-part process. And some governments, I think, thought the same thing. Now, if we're moving now away from that and saying there is an accountability, you know, more to the community, and that's people feel that's being replaced. With the GAC clearly saying it won't put up nominees of some sort, with the CCs clearly not being very clear what they want but being uncomfortable, the question I'm worrying about now is whatever nominee model it is out of the three, does it start to look like those who are only motivated around, who are clearly motivated to have certain types of outcomes and who come, again, from a very narrow community? Looking from outside, when the perspective is who is ICANN accountable to, and people do analysis of who's ICANN accountable to, and they take all this legalistic mechanisms to its nth degree, does it end up being the same 8 and 10 people? Right? And so instead of this being more accountable from an outside perspective, it looks less and less accountable. It looks more and more inward dealing of a certain community. I don't know the answer to this, but I just wanted to share it because as I've watched the process emerge, I've been beginning to worry that that might actually be the practical outcome of other people's analysis, and it could end up with a devaluing in the international arena of the ICANN model. That it's not international, multi-stakeholder, et cetera, et cetera. When you really go through the analysis, it's the same 8 people or the same 8 positions. So I'm sorry, it's not very optimistic, but I am interested to see how we sort of can avoid that sort of analysis anyway.
Thank you very much, Paul. Next one, I have Matthew.
If I could just respond to Paul, it's a really important question, and it kind of fundamentally has to be answered by this process. If we're creating a system that makes it worse, if you like, if replacing the U.S. government link with an internally defined system of mutual and linear accountability is perceived broadly to make ICANN's accountability worse, then we need to do what AUDA said in its submission, which is start again. Now, that isn't what the community feedback that we've had suggests, and I know you said you didn't have an answer. I wish you did. But I think my hope and intention, certainly I think shared by many here, is that the model that we do end up sort of settling on or trying to come to consensus around is going to involve at least the kind of the ICANN set of stakeholder, not really fair to say stakeholder groups, but almost like stakeholder envelopes or stakeholder organizing. And by creating a sort of more separated set of powers within the ICANN system, that by itself should help the corporation be more accountable. I can't really go any further than that, though, than to suggest that the concern that you're raising, if we can't come up with a convincing way of doing it, you know, it does put the transition at risk.
Thank you, Jordan. Do you want to react to that, Paul?
I think that's a good answer, and I'm happy to contribute in any way I can to help have a solution. And I just wanted to clarify, simply because I happen to sit next to Despain, I've got no association with ADA.
Okay, so next on the queue I have Matthew.
Yeah, and I think that it's kind of a follow-up to this discussion, and a reminder when we're discussing about replacing, of course, the ultimate accountability mechanism that may have been perceived as being the NTIA, the community mechanism, whatever it is not the only mechanism we're setting up. The IRP is the key mechanism for accountability to any stakeholder who is affected. And this is the crown jewel, as we've said already. And this is the key accountability mechanism for stakeholders that are outside ICANN, and hopefully we can bring them in. So that's one aspect. Second aspect is, I think we're starting to see through these concerns we're receiving, how important it is that the community mechanism, however we define it, ensures diversity of representation of the ASOs and ACs, but also of other criteria, which we still have to work on. And of course, that the ASOACs themselves need to be applied the same accountability principles that we've been discussing from the start for ICANN. Transparency, a certain level of consultation, some independence criteria, checks and balances, and so on. And we have been building our proposals on a mutual accountability principle. And we need to make sure all the sides obviously are accountable to each other and not to an external body, which is certainly the fundamental approach we are taking, and that's getting a lot of support. And I'm really struck when looking at the comments on Work Party 1 and the community powers and the community mechanism, how much on the powers themselves we're very close. We're very, very close. There are some details to be worked out. Just the NOMCOM director removal aspect, which we know we're not very mature on. But the rest is a lot about details of how we're making this work. And most of our discussion obviously needs to be on the model discussion, and that's what we're about to have. After the break, I'm hopeful we can move to these pitch sessions after the break. And Paul, if you ever have ideas by then, you're welcome to join this pitch session to share your view. I think that would be extremely valuable.
Thank you, Matthew. I have many people in the queue, but I don't know. I saw Kapoor. Did you want to react to what Matthew just said? Yes? Okay, go ahead.
I apologize to ask for the floor for the second time, but I have another point to discuss. CWG has sent its output to 4 chartering organizations. Expect receiving reply from these 4 chartering organizations by 25th of June 2015. Yeah. These
charter organizations which are discussing, hopefully they have read fully what was the report, they would mention that, yes, possibly. We understand that the procedures is good in place, but we would like to know about its implementability. Not the time of implementation, its implementability. The reply would be yes, their implementability depends on some other things which is not clear, like membership model or designator model, UA, ARP, IRP, and so on and so forth. Then it would be very difficult for that chartering organizations to give a clear reply to CWG when it does not know whether whatever has been produced or suggested, even if everything is okay, is or is not implementable. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kovas. Next time here I have Matthew Shears. Matthew.
Yes, thanks, Matthew Shears, for the record. I just wanted to encourage everyone to go into the actual comments and the analysis that we did of those comments, as Jordan recommended. What doesn't come through in that summary is the diversity of questions and the need for greater detail. This is an obvious statement, and Caruso has mentioned this, but we do need to really spend some time looking at how we detail out the proposals so that somebody who is outside of this group understands exactly what we're talking about, because those questions pointed to a lack of comprehension, understandably so, of these models because of their complexity. And we need to be absolutely clear, very practical delineation of what the powers are, how they're implemented, how you form a UA, how you deal with the membership. And this is just a different approach we need to take in the next round. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Matthew and Jordan.
Can I just say I completely agree with you, Matthew, and if I've got one kind of fear or reflection on this process, I'm something of a perfectionist myself, and I'm a little bit terrified at the pace at which we're being required to work. I think that if we had taken the time to do what you say for the first version of our proposal, we would have saved ourselves a lot of time, a lot of heartache, a lot of unnecessary concern, I can't really say more than that. We have to take the time to make sure that whatever consensus we come to on the next version of the proposal is presented in a way that is less dense and less kind of insider legible and outsider obscure. So I think that's the test we have to set ourselves.
Thank you, Jordan. Next in the queue, I have Alan Greenberg.
Thank you. Part of what I'm going to say is, I guess, extracted from my spiel, my sales pitch, but it's very relevant to this current discussion. We've been talking about which ACs and SOs will actually participate if we go the UA route or something like that. We've seen a message from the SAC saying they really want to stay an advisory committee and do not want to sign up for this kind of thing. But it's a very different analysis one makes now and if we were in crisis mode. If the community was had great difficulty with the direction of the board and we are really in a mode where we're not sure that ICANN is viable, the SAC's going to be really interested, because the lack of viability of ICANN puts the security and stability of the DNS at great risk. So what would play out in a crisis mode situation is different from today sitting and talking about the theoretical one. And their interest in participating might be very different, and the same goes for the other groups, at that time than it is now. Requiring action on their part now to become one of the owners, as it were, of the process is very different from their ability, their desire to want to intervene in the strongest possible way at a later time. So it's something we have to think about.
Thank you very much. Alan, Jordan?
I think intuitively I agree with you, Alan, but I think we can't do the thinking for people. So one hopes that the FSAC itself thought that through in making its comment. And it might be a specific kind of, we're going to be talking with them here, it might also be a specific question that's worth asking as part of our second public comment. You know, do you have any, have you thought about how this framework would work in a time of great trial for the ICANN system? Just to make sure that we've prompted people to think along those lines.
Thanks, Jordan. And we're closing the queue with Avery. So next I have Willie Curry, then Tijani, Sebastian, and Avery. So, Willie?
Hi, everyone. Willie Curry. Just thinking about this discussion and perhaps paraphrasing Winston Churchill to the effect that community empowerment is the worst form of government except for all those other forms that have been tried from time to time. And I think maybe when one looks at Larry Strickling's comments about that the draft proposal focuses on a membership model for community empowerment and asks the question, have other possible models been thoroughly examined, detailed, and documented, that it may be that a useful exercise would be to take a number of these other models so that one can throw into relief the particular community empowerment model being proposed here. For example, one of the other advisors, Roberto Bisio, pointed towards the International Labour Organization. Now, that might be something that this group should analyze because it does have a kind of multi-stakeholder model of governments, employers, and unions. So we should perhaps look at that and see what its applicability might be. Obviously, the villainous structure in terms of private international organizations is FIFA, which is privately incorporated into Switzerland, which is a possible negative example. And it may be that there are other forms that we could look at which throw into relief this ongoing question about, well, who is the global multi-stakeholder community to which this accountability power is being transferred from the NTIA. For example, one can imagine a situation where one says, all right, let's get the IGF to set up a bunch of internet citizen panels. Let's empower them in a particular way to review the strategic plan, to have some kind of accountability function. Let's structure them on the various UN continental region, so we have 10 people randomly selected from each of the major continents, and try and dig in using that kind of scenario as to, well, what would it mean to try and construct some form of global public interest, and how viable is that? And then perhaps look more closely then at the current community empowerment model as a form of epistemic community, and not as something which is going to somehow be accountable to an imaginary global citizenship, when in fact there is no such global citizenship possible at this time of history. There's no world government. There's no possibility of being a citizen of the planet. So in that sense, what I'm saying is that perhaps if one only has one proposal on the table and you don't have the other alternatives, then people tend to pick into this proposal in a very negative way. Whereas if we throw it into relief against, well, what are the realistic, practical other alternatives, it might not look so bad. Thanks.
Thank you, Willie. But let's just remember that the proposal in the document is just the reference proposals, but it's not the only proposal that has been discussed so far, and we, of course, will continue to discuss the many models through the week. So next on the queue, I have Tijani. Tijani?
Thank you, Leon. This is a reaction to what Matthew said, that we are very close to an agreement about all the powers proposed. it is not the case, especially for the recalling the individual members of the board without reason by the appointing parties. When I objected to that, I was told that it is a requirement of the California jurisdiction. If it is, that means that it is here now. So why it is in our report? We are asked to come up with mechanisms that enhance accountability. So if they are there, if it is there, it will not enhance accountability. If it is considered that it will enhance accountability, and I don't think so. Recalling individual members for a serious reason by the whole community is something that I will strongly support. And this, I consider, will enhance accountability. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Di Yang. Okay. So we're back. Next on the queue, I have Sebastian Bachelet. Sebastian.
Yes, thank you very much. We have no just one proposal on the table, even if it's one. It's more important than the two other. And we can also, of course, open to discussion about become an intergovernmental association. I think it was out of the game by the proposal, the request coming from the NTIA to try to get that through the multi-stakeholder community. We are not citizens of the world, yes, but hopefully we are user of internet, and there is one internet, one global internet, and in fact I consider myself as citizen of internet than citizen of one global resource of this world. Is it the same? No, maybe not. But we need to figure out how we can be better to express this voice in this discussion today. And one of the problems is that we can't just put the number of comments we get to know if it is the right balance. Because if not, except that I have no time, money, and so on, but I can write 10 reports and say, I agree. And be careful with the fact that there are just only two who are against. Because it's sometimes the tiny voice who are more important than the strong voice. And where we are today, I would like very much that you, we as a group, consider all the alternative as a viable alternative, and then we discuss in depth. Since the beginning of this morning, I heard a lot of people agreeing with the fact that we have made a huge step and we are in the right direction, and we agree on, and we agree on, and we agree on. Maybe, but please, you don't need to repeat that. I really would like to go to the end of this work, and when we will be at the end of this work, we will see if we are where you hope that you are. I am not sure that we are still already there. And I hope that you will consider all the inputs who are in contradiction of what the so-called majority. It's not to destroy the job, it's not to destroy the work of this group, it's not to push or to be against the IANA stewardship transition and to keep the role of the U.S. government. It's all the reverse. It's that we need to do that well. And to do that well, it's not because somebody came with a proposal the first day that they are right. No, he is right, and that we need really to have this discussion in depth. And I hope that the next part of the discussion will allow some more balanced exchange of ideas and try to find out what could be a good compromise. I understand the point of the other. I hope that you will understand the point of the people against with brackets, and specifically my proposal when I will come on stage. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sebastian. Next on the queue, I have Avery Doria. Avery?
Thank you. Avery Doria speaking. I want to go back to the point that Caboose brought up about the chartering organizations reviewing CWG and seeing us not have a complete proposal may make it difficult for them to decide. I find that approach somewhat problematic in that, yes, we are still quibbling over a lot of the details and the shape of the model. We are not in disagreement about the improvement of the accountability, the improvement of the reconsideration, the improvement of the IPR. We've just got, you know, details that we are arguing about, lots of them. So I perhaps it's because I'm not a perfectionist and I'm quite comfortable living with certain amount of insecurity in life always. I don't know, maybe it's my life, but I see that we should have actually put enough on the table. Now, in terms of Matt's issue of, well, perhaps the proposal could have been more complete, perhaps it could have been explained better, I think what we're engaged in is a stepwise refinement. We put something on the table. We are now seeing where do we need to tune, where do we need to answer better, where do we need to fix. And so I really don't think we should, you know, rend ourselves with doubt because people have comments and questions, but basically sort of see it as the menu of what's ahead of us. And, you know, at the risk of offending Sebastian, I'm not saying, oh, we're doing great, and I was kind of bemused when we started the day by patting ourselves on the back. But, you know, it's we are in a process. We are, you know, progressing towards a goal. And to go back to my first topic, is when people look at the CWG, I think they have to look at the intention and the direction the CCWG proposal is taking, and not its have all details been decided yet. So that's what I'd like to ask. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Avery. Thank you very much, Jordan, of course, for taking us through this thoughtful review of the comments. And it's now time for a break. So we'll have a 20-minute break, and we'll reconvene at 10:30, please. Thank you. Hello, everybody. I'm sorry to burst your bubble, but we're already running 10 minutes late, so I would kindly ask you to reconvene. Thank you very much to those who have taken their seats. Thank you to those that are trying. Thank you very much. So let's log back onto the Adobe Connect room. Well, thank you all. We're back on our session. And I see two hands up already, Sebastian and Avery. okay, so now to the next agenda item, I would like to hand it to my co-chair, Matthew Bale. So, Matthew?
Thanks, Lynn. What I'll do now, we've listened to updates from Work Party 2, Work Party 1. I will do a very short summary of the input we've received from on the questions regarding Work Stream 2. And very quickly, basically, the comments are supportive of the approach we are taking with a transitional article. There are some refinements on the wording being asked for. And obviously a request for a clearer time frame of Workstream 2, which voiced. We've received a number of comments
stressing the importance of addressing the jurisdiction issue, and certainly that's an area where we could do a better job explaining our position and where we stand, and I think that's going to be for us to take on further in the next version of our documents. There's a need to work that further, but so that's the point to be taken into account. Regarding the list of Workstream 2 items, there were some views expressed asking for some reconsideration of some items being pushed up to Workstream 1. That includes DIDP, document information disclosures, security audits, and ombudsman review. So we'll have to check as a group whether this small number of comments are valid on the merits, or whether we keep the workstream them in Workstream 2 based on the definition we had agreed on for Workstream 1 items to be those who are strictly necessary to enforce the various requirements in the future. Because due to timing considerations, I think we must be careful not to overload Workstream 1, which is already challenging. And in terms of items that we had not considered in Workstream 2 but are being suggested, we've received some comments suggesting the inclusion of a new item, which goal would be to assess the efficiency of the Workstream 1 proposal as part of Workstream 2. So that's sort of a check on the whole process. And that's probably a discussion we'll have to undertake in this group, whether we think that's part of our mandate or whether it's part of a future ATRT review mandate to assess. And we've also received some comments, I think two comments, suggesting to add a bylaw which would require ICANN to disclose government contacts in terms of transparency. And that was an item that could be addressed in Workstream 2. We'll have to discuss about these particular suggestions as well. And in reviewing the list of Workstream 2 items, I think it's fair to say we also will have to discuss how we plan to address the ASO-AC accountability discussions we've touched upon earlier, whether it's Workstream 1, Workstream 2, whether there's a part of it which is Workstream 1 and a part of it which might be Workstream 2. And I think that is all for the report on the comments on Workstream 2. And so we can definitely take questions on that, if any. I am seeing none. So I will now turn to Thomas for the summary of the general comments and methodology questions, which provide a nice conclusion for our review of the public comments.
Thanks very much, Mathieu. I would like to briefly speak to two chapters of our report on general remarks as well as the methodology, and I hope that we'll be able to access the Adobe Room again shortly, because the management abstract for the general comments section, I think, or we think, is a decisive part in our communication with the community. So it's just 10-12 lines, and I would like to read that out to you, but I will do so once we get back into the Adobe. It is worthwhile noting that the vast majority of comments that we received for the general section was supportive of what we're doing. The commenters said that the recommendations that we are working on are seen to be improving ICANN's accountability substantially. So there's a lot of support there. The language that is used there is partially repetitive to what the commenters also said in the respective sections of the report, so I'm not going to dwell on that for much longer. Noteworthy, we have two commenters that have been opposed to what we're doing as such. So Roberto Bisio, one of the advisors, is asking us to take a completely different view at things, particularly stemming from the jurisdiction question, and it is our recommendation, or the recommendation that I've put as an action item in there, that we provide a clearer rationale where we're not taking the route of completely reorganizing ICANN, but where we are doing what we're doing as can be found in the report. And also there's a comment criticism from .NA written by Ebert Lisse that challenges overall what we're doing. But apart from that, it's more or less requesting us to continue what we're doing, but also to flesh out more details that are required to make this a complete proposal. With respect to the methodology, we got some criticism for having truncated the public comment period. Some commenters thought that this was an undue limitation of their possibility to chime in and make themselves heard. I guess our group's response, and this is what we've discussed on our call previously, is that there will be another public comment period. So other than for other projects in ICANN, this is not the only possibility for the community to chime in. Rather, this was the first opportunity for the community to let us know whether we are navigating into the right direction, and then they will certainly have the opportunity during the second public comment period, which will last for the full 40 days, to comment. It is also noteworthy that some commenters have asked us to be more, for us to be more specific on the term of public interest. So while our group has already done substantial work on that, that's something that we need to elaborate on further. There has been a request to be clearer than we currently are, and also to be more transparent with our messaging and with the language that, that we're using for particularly the non-English-speaking audience to fully absorb and understand what we're doing to be truly inclusive. Talking about inclusiveness, the theme that we've discussed earlier this morning on how we can engage with the global internet community has been raised. I think that's well on our radar, so that there's no specific additional action required, but we just have to be more vocal on that in our responses. So the final point that I'd like to make is the comment from the board asking for an impact analysis. We've already acknowledged in our previous call that we will take a look into that. We've received a plethora of questions on that, and we will further work on that. So I guess that's a brief summary of where we are. As you will hopefully agree, the substantive questions are primarily being dealt with in the respective sections of the report. So there was not so much substance. These were more general comments and questions on process. With respect to the abstract, I still haven't managed to get back into the Adobe room, and to be quite honest, I can't read that out to you at this distance. Can you move to the general remarks section that's methodology. Move it up, please. There's another box with the management abstract here. And maybe Adam, you can help out just by reading that for the whole group, because I guess that's one of the key messages documenting the overall support, and we should make sure that we're all fine with that message to be conveyed. Or Mathieu, maybe you can.
Then I'll begin. It's Adam Peake for the record. The abstract from the general says that the majority of the comments received were supportive of the general approach taken by the CCWG, whereby ICANN's accountability architecture should be based on four building blocks, i.e. an empowered community, the board, the bylaws, and the independent review process. Most comments regarding the suggestions that have been made as improvements. most comments regarded the suggestions that have been made as improvements. And that's the end of the abstract.
So unless there are requests to revise or augment that, I would like to open it up for questions on this brief report on general remarks and methodology. There don't seem to be any. I can't see whether there are hands raised in the Adobe. There don't seem to be any. So with that, I think we can conclude this part of the agenda and move to the section of the agenda where we discuss the different models on the table. And my superstar co-chair, Mathieu, has actually prepared ballots. So we're going to have a draw. And with that, I'd like to hand over to him.
Thank you so much, Thomas. So the idea of this section is really to understand each other's perspective. I want to stress this very much. It's not about a debate. It's about understanding. Just a reminder of the context. We need, as a CCWG, to prepare a proposal to enhance ICANN's accountability that brings ICANN's accountability to a level that is sufficient for the NTIA transition to take place. And we need a proposal, and we need this proposal to reach consensus. That's two conditions. And it's not majority, it's consensus. It can be a rough consensus, but we cannot be satisfied with any proposal whereby a significant portion of the community would not feel comfortable with. So we need to work this out so that everyone is reasonably dissatisfied with the proposal and equally unhappy, as Thierry is saying. And that's the basis for what we're standing for in the multi-stakeholder model, is finding common ground. So step one to this process is making sure we understand where everyone is coming from, what are the underlying assumptions that we're making, and what are the requirements that we have when we state that we have a concern or are in disagreement with certain proposals. So the session here is going to be about some pitch, whatever you call them, elevator pitch, or short presentations of how some of the participants or members here view the community mechanism options, the models. So I would set two rules for those presentations. One is timing. Make it short. If you think you're making short, make it shorter. 3 to 5 minutes is very short. So please be aware of this. If we want to have this discussion, we need these short discussions. Otherwise, it's going to absorb everything. So we'll be using a timer. Second is try as much as possible to be factual about how you see things. So avoid slogans, as we were discussing last Tuesday, and try and explain the concrete aspects of what you're trying to achieve or what you're trying to avoid in terms of situation, and maybe providing examples is better. So those are the two very simple rules. Currently on the speaking list and in the ballots, I have, with no particular order, Jordan, Avery, Becky, Greg, Sam, Alan, Sebastian. 1, 2, 3, 4. Sorry? No, it wasn't. It wasn't. I randomized it using a very elaborate algorithm, which I am not able to disclose for security reasons. Does anyone else want to join the list? Rulof. Excellent. I'm not on the other room.
We have some technical difficulties.
So I take questions, but I think Avery is first on the.
Have you added Robin?
I haven't added Robin yet.
So we can't do the draw without having Robin in it.
Yes, we do.
Let's spend a half an hour doing this.
Only half an hour?
No. What I want to make sure is we have clarity on what we're doing. So I want this particular set of questions to be, what are we doing about? And obviously, if anyone wants to join and make the presentation, this exercise is about giving everyone a stand if they want to. So, Avery.
Excuse me, Avery speaking. I just wanted to ask a quick clarifying question about slogans. I find that taking phrases that people have perhaps used before and all of a sudden branding them as slogans to be very problematic. I think that in these bits of discussion where people are present, I have no idea whether I've got a slogan or not in what's going to come out of my mouth. If I've used the words before, it may be a slogan. If anybody else has repeated what I said before, it's even more likely to be a slogan. So I think this prejudice we're developing against things, it's kind of like all of a sudden anything that comes out of someone's mouth that they don't agree with, that's a slogan. And I would really like to stay away from the slogan that people are using slogans.
Be as fact-based as possible. I know it's not as easy as just saying this, and depends on everyone's perspective, but I think everyone gets the idea that we need to clarify things for each
because,
other.
Because, Mathieu, I think it's, I mean...
And Olaf, you're next.
It's difficult to have a discussion if we all have to state facts. That's just an exchange of facts. So I think we should be allowed to have phrases, to utter phrases that start with, I think.
Well,
and that's always, for me, that's a disclaimer that I'm not, or probably not, or maybe not, stating a fact.
Okay, let's close this. You got a point. I would argue that I think that is already a fact because it's factual that you're thinking. But anyway. Let's stop this. Let's try to be as illustrative. We need to make this understood by the audience. That's the point. Make sure your presentation impresses the audience and that the audience can understand what you're talking about. You can add anything you want, Thomas.
Yeah, I guess this, you know, Sebastian made a very good point earlier this morning when he said that in our report we have different models, but a decision is not yet made, and you were concerned that too much weight is given to what we call the reference model. This is actually to give everybody on equal footing the opportunity to explain to this whole group the benefits of their preferred option, to then have a discussion this afternoon as to what the group thinks. I think during our last week's deliberations, we have moved too quickly from somebody making a proposal to immediately criticizing it or finding its weaknesses. This is why this session is reserved to everybody having the opportunity to do the best to explain the model in the most shining manner that they can. And I think you should just take the 3 to 5 minutes to do the best possible job in order to get traction with your proposal inside this group. You know, this is actually to give everybody a fair chance so that nobody can complain at a later stage that this group has started the discussion in a biased fashion. Over to you, Mathieu.
Yeah, and just a last point of clarification. We won't take questions after the presentations, after each, but only at the end. We'll try to wrap up and debate and discuss around the overall presentations we've heard. And with that, Thomas, would you...
We need a drum roll.
Greg Shatton.
Ladies and gentlemen, Greg Shatton. Would you like to do it here? I think it's best if you come.
hadn't expected to speak first. Merci beaucoup. In any case, I had expected to be speaking later, so I think that what we're looking at is really a fundamental difference among models in where we see the judgment or control or authority sitting, whether it's with the community or with the board. Having worked with nonprofit organizations myself, both with members and without members, an organization that has members is, in a sense, member-centric, and an organization that is without members is essentially board-centric or management-centric. So if we're trying to put power and authority and judgment ultimately into the hands of the community, membership is a natural tool to do it within the tools that are available to us. Anything that doesn't do that is essentially less empowering. So when I look at what tool I would want to use to accomplish what we're trying to accomplish, that's where my hand would naturally go in the tool chest. And trying to use a rubber mallet where I would want to use a saw, we're just not going to get through the process as well as possible. Also, speaking as a member of the CWG, where I represent the CSG, the change in our model between our first draft and second draft puts greater reliance on the result of this organization's, this working group's ability to give authority and accountability ultimately to the hands of the global multi-stakeholder community. In our first iteration in that group, we had Contract Co., which was intended to be an external accountability mechanism. There is no more Contract Co. There is no more external accountability mechanism. Accountability in that mechanism flows through ICANN. Therefore, we have to make sure that it flows through ICANN to the community. And in my view, the model that uses the right tools, that has the right legal heft to it, is the model that uses members. And so I hesitate to call it the membership model because that almost becomes a slogan in the sense that some people have said, I would never support that. But I think that ultimately it is the tool that provides the community with a real basis in corporate organization and in governance to exercise and, more importantly, to obtain the ultimate judgment that we believe the community should have. And if we don't, then maybe the issue is that we don't sufficiently trust the community. And that's a whole separate issue that we may want to grapple with, but frankly, I don't think that if we don't trust the community, then I don't think any of our models ultimately will yield the result that we want. Given that, I think we should choose a model that best yields the ultimate results that we want, and then try to solve the issues and implementation details that will come with it, because every one of our models will have implementation details in any event. I haven't been timing myself, but I think I'll stop now. There. I yield the last minute and 8 seconds of my time.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Greg. Thank you so much. You set up a great example of meeting the expectations for that, laying out the concerns and requirements. Next is? And next is Alan Greenberg.
I love the advance notice when it gets here.
Up to you.
Up until now,
we have been working with a set of bylaws which the lawyers now tell us probably shouldn't have existed to begin with. We appoint directors by ACs and by SOs and now one AC. The NOMCOM appoints directors. All of those things are something that don't really follow any pattern in nonprofit associations in California, but it works, and it's worked for whatever reason. I'm proposing that we continue with essentially the same model. That is, we put the powers we want in the bylaws and assume that they are going to be honored. I'm not finished yet, however. The only one I believe we can't do is prior approval of the budget. But I believe we can cover that with a mechanism by which any group that has an objection to the budget can formally file it and require under the bylaws certain consideration, similar to what we do with GAC advice. It all hinges, now that's been described as a non-enforceable model. I do not believe that is the case. The enforceability that I'm proposing is that we have the ability to remove one or more board directors. The process would have to follow agreed processes, and I'm not debating right now whether an AC or an SO removes their own director or the community, but we have the ability of removing some or all of the board. That threat is a big stick, and I believe it's an effective enough stick to make sure that the board either works with the community and comes to closure on what the community needs and what the board can do, or the board goes away. And I believe that's something which will give us the accountability we want, and the only question is, how do you remove the board without individuals, members? And I believe the lawyers have given us a mechanism by which board members sign an irrevocable letter before they take place that essentially agrees they will resign at the wish of the community. We can make that enforceable because they can agree that this is enforceable on a rule of law, perhaps by the ombudsman, perhaps by other mechanisms, so that we do have a mechanism to take them to court if they refuse to step down and honor the letter they've signed. And I think this gives us pretty much everything we want. The threat of removal should give us everything that we need. And it really comes down to that. I'll point out that there's two other benefits over the other models. We've talked a lot about in this last meeting, in this last hour or so, about ACs, particularly ACs, but possibly even some SOs, who could not participate in the membership model or who would choose not to. If you start looking at who's left, we have a very small part of the community that is now calling all the shots. I think the optics of that are going to look really, really bad. Moreover, as I pointed out earlier, there are parts of the community that might not want to sign up and be a member, might not want an unincorporated association, but if we ever got into crisis mode, they really would want to be involved. And doing what I'm suggesting now does not make them sign a release now saying I'm not going to participate later. As an AC or SO, they have the right to participate later. And lastly, something that I hadn't even thought about is we've been talking a lot about jurisdiction and saying that maybe sometime in the future we need to consider the ability to move somewhere else. Tying our entire governance structure to California law, I think, puts us in a position where we may never be able to move or even consider moving. Now, some people may be encouraged by that, but I'm not sure that serves us well in the overall world market. And lastly, I think what we're proposing here is a minimalist view, which we may actually be able to do in the very tight time frame we have. And the time frame is tight. We probably have to have the bylaws in place by the end of the year if we're going to make this transition. And I don't see how we're going to do it on the more complex ones. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. You met the timing as well. Good job. And next is Robin.
It's all the way in the back. hasn't started, Robin. Thank you, Robin. That was very efficient. Well done. I want to say this. There's no intention whatsoever of hidden agenda behind this. And you have your 5 minutes.
Thank
Go
you.
Ahead.
Okay. There we go. So I'm going to do a quick pitch for the empowered designator model. So we talked about the six powers that we want the community to have, and I think we're all pretty much in agreement that these are important powers and we want the community to have them. So the lawyers came back and said, well, with respect to the empowered designator model, four of those powers you can have, and two of them are going to present challenges. And those two, as you all know, are the strategic plan and the budget approval issues. I think that those two issues are not enough to sort of cause all the sort of upheaval and the kind of great change that we're going to have to go through if we're going to actually switch to a membership model. I think it is a lot more difficult. There's going to be a lot more issues that will be in conflict that will have to be resolved before we can actually get there to the membership model. So I think that considering these are only two things that we can't get entirely the way we want under the empowered designator model, I don't think it's enough to push us in the other direction. I think rather we should try to focus on ways we can beef up the empowered designator model. We can have strategic plans and budgets that are much more heavily involved with the community in terms of their formulation and development. Perhaps they don't even go to the board for their final approval until the community has signed off on them. There are ways that we can require the two to work together to try to come closer to agreement before there's a final decision. I understand the board's going to have the final say on that. However, they will also have the knowledge that they're going to be kicked out if they don't do what we want. So I think that that provides a very strong incentive. I think that the membership model may work for many people in this room and many people in the ICANN community, but it doesn't work for those outside of the ICANN community. The problems that they have are that ICANN is a the problems that they currently have are that ICANN is a California corporation, and they really don't like that. And so for us to say, well, now we're going to be a California membership corporation, it doesn't address their problems. In fact, it further entrenches exactly what they have a problem with. So I think that the empowered designator model can be more open, can allow for more participation, particularly from governments and people outside of the traditional ICANN community. So I think there's just too much work to be done to switch to a membership model and not enough time to do it right. And so we really risk making terrible mistakes and that we're stuck with. So I think we're better off just really working to try to beef up the empowered designator model and get the kinds of powers that we need that way. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Robin. And the next speaker is Jordan. And I have a request by Malcolm to join the queue. So I'll suggest we add him in the bowl so that he does not unduly benefit from the privilege of speaking last. But of course, the request is honored. Jordan?
Thanks, Matthew. I just wanted to, I've been involved with this work, as we all have. I don't want to reiterate a particular model. I want to reflect on why we got to where we got, and a fundamental understanding that shows about the nature of human societies and human communities. When we have something that's important in a political community, and one way of looking at ICANN is that, a very common thing that we organize is a separation of powers. We say that when you want to avoid having to rely on the goodness or badness, the trustworthiness or the untrustworthiness of a particular set of actors, you don't leave them alone with single powers. You distribute power. You share power. You divide authority. You make sure that no single point can be a point of failure. And if you look back to some of the founding political revolutions, the American Revolution or the French Revolution, you see that thread that we recognize our fallibility as people. We recognize that we do not get things right all of the time, and we take steps to protect ourselves in our organizations, in our communities, by distributing power, by making sure no one has a single point of authority, that no one has the ability to break our communities or our system. This is a constitutional discussion for ICANN. This is a constitutional moment. And what we are proposing in our model that we've to ask the community about is to say we will share power more broadly. We will distribute authority away from a single point of the community, the board of directors, and we will distribute it more broadly through our SO and AC structure, our open multi-stakeholder structure. And that is what the model that we're calling membership, for our horrible shorthand, does. It forever changes where authority lies in the ICANN environment, away from the board of directors, and it embeds that authority in the whole community. And that's why it's a fundamentally important shift. That's what makes ICANN as a community trustable. That's why a stewardship transition can and should happen. Because what the model says is, we're not going to create a problem in the future that we can't fix. We're not going to sort of tie our hands behind our backs and make sure that we are going to rely on someone always getting it right. We're kind of acknowledging our own fallibility as a group. We're saying that we don't want to just have to trust a particular set of actors, but that we should embed in what works quite well, a multi-stakeholder policy-making body, the authority that it needs to be able to adjust with the time as the internet changes, as the DNS changes, and to implement its narrowly focused mission in the right way. So that's why I support the kind of fundamental basis, whether you call it, whether it's membership, whether it's designators. Membership fits most cleanly with that approach. It most honestly says to the global internet communities, the global public, we're not going to rely on a high priesthood of people sitting around the ICANN board table. We're going to rely on all of you who choose to participate in this model, and we're going to imbue you, structured through your SOs and ACs. You can come along as an at-large user. You can come along as a CCTLD manager. We're going to trust you over time to work together to make ICANN work. That is the underpinning logic for the model that we've proposed. That's what the membership model is for. That's what it does, and that's why I support it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Jordan Ruloff is next. I noticed a fair amount of slogans there. I'll be looking at the transcript, and it's really good slogans, actually. I like them. Empty-handed. I'm not surprised.
In fact, I do come empty-handed, slightly, or somehow, because I don't really have a model that I want to defend, because I think that model is not yet there. Adam said a lot of things that I think he knows that I support. Alan. I think it's very clear that most of us and most of the community agree to the powers that we foresee. But making sure that we can use those powers, I think in that process we're looking too much at things that already exist, that we have seen working, that the lawyers can explain to us, of which we think we can predict the outcome. And what surprises me a bit is that this industry or this sector or the internet has become what it is, not because of all the legal processes that we created around it, but I think very often because of the lack of all kinds of legal processes around it. So I think we have to be careful with too quickly thinking that this situation might not happen, but we need to protect ourselves, and this is the best protection that we can think of, and then look at things that we know that already exist. I think we can be a bit more creative and think of a few ways that maybe we don't know and we haven't seen before, but that might work and will work. So that would be my plea. Let's not
yes, the membership model with its legal enforceability is something that would probably work if everybody would agree to it. My worry is that we won't get enough people and organizations and structures that will agree with it, and that will make us end up empty-handed, like I came to this table. Thank you.
Well, excellent conclusions. Wow, the rhetorics of this was excellent. I'm afraid we don't have video, so we won't make videos out of them, but that would have been good. Sam, you're next.
Hi, everyone. Sam Eisner from ICANN, and revisiting an earlier conversation that we have, I don't come here with the answers. We don't have the answers. We don't have a model that's already laid out that we want to spring on you at the last minute. We're working through this proposal along with you and have questions, and so, and I'm hearing that some of the other colleagues in the room have questions as well. What I come here to say is my vision is that we have certain characteristics of a model, and it could be membership, it could be designator, it could be Alan's alternative model, it could be the creative model that Roloff was just asking for as well. But then I think it's important that that model have certain things that are inherent within it. One of those is that it doesn't pose a challenge to ICANN's not-for-profit status in the development of it. I think the fact of ICANN as a not-for-profit is very important. And we have to make sure, particularly as we look holistically at the proposal that we anticipate coming out of the ICG that incorporates the new post-transition ICANN or IANA function operator that will be a separate entity coming out of the CWG if that proceeds to the ICG proposal, that looking at the changes that happen with both of those in mind, don't do something combined that requires us to then, if we move to a membership model, have to redefend ICANN's position as a not-for-profit organization as we move there. I don't know if that will happen, but I do know that there have been recent concerns of organizations seeking not-for-profit status from the IRS about not-for-profit status when they're membership organizations. It doesn't mean it's impossible, doesn't mean that it's a road that we can't go down, but I think that we need to have certain characteristics that we hold as very important. It's a question we need to look at. I think that there should be some further looking, if we're moving down the path of a membership model, that we understand that it's an appropriate model to use when it's a collection of potentially disparate interests. We have a very robust model within ICANN that we all come here because we have one fundamental interest in mind, and that is we support the continued operation of a secure, stable, reliable, globally interoperable internet. But we come at that from many different perspectives. If we all agreed, we wouldn't be sitting here today after months and months of conversation and many different working groups. And it's not clear to me, and again, I don't have the answer, that the membership model that's been proposed makes sense in an organization of disparate interests instead of those who come at it with very clear, cohesive interests on a range of issues, as opposed to holding one fundamental item above all. I think that any model that we go to needs to maintain open pathways to new participants. The membership model, we need to really look and see what does it mean to be someone new who comes into the system. Do you have a voice? Do you have a pathway? Do you need to immediately associate yourself with a CRSO in order to be able to meaningfully participate in the community empowerment models that are being developed? Are there easier pathways to assure that people still have access to come into ICANN and have voices when they walk into the organization itself without having to immediately align themselves with a group? And most importantly, that we have a model that's tested and has the concerns raised and considered. and I've heard this hesitation come from other people as well. We need to make sure that we have an organization, that we're not going into unknown territory, that we're holding up the value of stability of certain parts of the organization when we're entering into a new territory of a transition of stewardship, that it's the same place that we need to hold out to the global community that we're a stable organization and we understand how to work together. Does this mean that membership should be totally off the table? No. There are still questions that we can answer within it. I think that we could also think about a path towards membership if there are lesser changes that wind up not giving the results that the community wishes to happen.
Thank you very much, Sam. That was very well put. And Sebastian is the next speaker.
Thank you. I was never trained to write a book, but I used to do demonstration in France when I was student, and I have a lot of slogans, and sorry about that. Maybe it's because I am all for revolution within ICANN, but not just between the so-called constituency and the board. It will need to be an holistic review. I am very puzzled at the fact that the third option didn't have a name. We try, Alan proposal, the proposal X, Y. I will not give you the one you will take, but just to give you one proposal. For an ICANN accountable, sorry, it's a slogan. For an ICANN accountable, diverse, open, transparent, multi-equal stakeholder who give confidence. And if I take all the first letter, I put them together, and in French it's done mes cadeaux, then I will translate it in English, it's my gift to the community. What is important is that wherever we go, we be sure that we don't put any legal characteristic or legal bodies in between the relationship between any groups of ICANN, any groups of ICANN. We don't need the legal to be involved, legal jurisdiction, sorry, U.S. legal jurisdiction or California ones to be involved in setting discussion between any groups, including the board within ICANN. We have to remember that all those groups are us, and even the board is us, one way or another, and that's important. It's if we ask accountability for the board, I am all for that, but I want us also at our level to be accountable, and it remains to be seen. We need to have trust as a motto. We need to trust each other, even if we disagree. We can trust that you came with the best idea, with the best wish for the organization. Maybe it will not be true at the end, but if we don't come open mind, with the end empty, with no weapons, we want to talk and find a solution. And that's important. And I don't think that creating new structure will allow this open discussion and enhance confidence. It's important also that we find a solution where we can leave this organization open to all, and open not just to the one who know where they want to go, how they want to go, but open, and eventually also open to create new structure or to merge structure or whatever. And if we are too solidified, and we are already too solidified in the structure of the organization, it's hard to came and to say, hey guys, I have this topic and I would like to take into this topic be taken into account within the organization. Multi-stakeholder for all and by all, it's important also because, thank you. Next time I will do it in French and in 3 minutes. The same point as it must be open. The current model is with different stakeholders. We don't know what will be the future. Maybe we will have user of Internet of the object who would like to come and to be a new constituency, a new SO, a new IC, whatever, and we need to be open to that discussion. But the question is how we can create it, who can create it, who gives the agreement, and so on and so forth. My last point is that diversity, it's an absolute need. And when I say diversity, it's real diversity. It's not just, okay, we have 5 regions, we have people for 5 regions. It's much more than that. It's also the question of, it's also the question of culture, the gender, of age, and a lot of others, diversity. It's difficult to take into account, but if we don't have that in mind when we choose, we will not solve the necessity of this. And I just one last point. We talk about the headquarters in U.S., and I put in my comment that maybe one way to help solve this diversity is to have a president CEO from another region, the chair of the board of the director from another region, and so on and so forth. That will ensure better diversity than just to say, okay, the headquarters must not be in U.S. And I will stop here. I have a lot of other things to tell you, but it's better to have this 5 minutes than no minutes at all. Thank you very much for listening.
Merci, Sébastien. Next is Avery, and while Avery is joining, Erica, were you asking to be added to the list, or...? Okay.
So then we have Malcolm, Becky, and then...
Okay. So I've come supporting what has been called the voluntary model. And I tend to think of it more as the multi-stakeholder, cooperative, democratic model. It's the same model that the internet has been created on. It's the same model that we've been living with for a very long time. It's the same one that we're using to find the solutions for transition and for accountability. So my first assumption, if it's good enough to get us this far, perhaps we shouldn't quite abandon it. It has been a successful model, albeit not perfect, but like all models, I don't know of any that are perfect, but like all models, it's one that benefits from constant refinement, constant improvement. And in fact, that's what we've been doing. Whether it was the ATRTs that have reinforced it and renewed it each couple years, and in fact we have another one of those that we're about to go into. We've now spent a year, a little bit more than a year, refining it and improving it. If we get the reconsideration request improvements, and we get to fix the IRP, and we have a means of removing recalcitrant directors, then whether it's singly or in a group, then we have improved it. We have reinforced it. We have made that model better. And so we will have then taken the ICANN model and reinforced it and made it better just as we had done before. So, and I believe in that notion of stepwise refinement and a perpetual process of stepwise refinement. And I guess closing, I'd like to say that I think that the court of multi-stakeholder community opinion is by far the strongest enforceability mechanism we can find. If we are not being accountable, we will be told. We will have the world pressing on our door. And by remaining open, by constantly doing outreach into the model we've got a much better chance. Thank you. And I really did do it all upside down.
Yeah, that's really amazing. I don't know how you do this.
Across the table.
In less than 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Just stress this out. Next is Malcolm. Then with Becky and then Eric.
Thank you, everyone. And my apologies, everyone, for not being here at the beginning. I've just literally got off the aeroplane. Chairman, you introduced the session by saying that its purpose was to introduce new things that have been overlooked or passed over too swiftly. And what we have, what we've heard, a lot of what we've heard so far has been actually pitches for the relative perspectives that have been pretty well aired. I would like to actually bring up a variation on the model that hasn't really been discussed, that was briefly mentioned and very quickly passed over, and I think is worthy of further exploration. We have really, you know, essentially two camps here. We've got a group of people that think that enforcement is fundamental to this process, and that if we don't achieve enforceability, this process is dead. Now, if you don't agree or prefer or whatever, you can at least see that for that group of people, it's going to be very hard to build consensus with them if you don't actually have something that achieves that quality. And those people have been told that the only way that you get ultimate enforceability is through the ability to go to court, which only applies if you are a member. And they've also been told that the boards don't even have a duty to honour the bylaws ahead of their own belief as what's the best for the organisation as a whole, unless you have a membership organisation. So that leads to a strong commitment to some form of membership model in that group. But it doesn't necessarily have to be the membership model that we've looked at. The criticism that's been given to the membership model that we've proposed is that the creation of unincorporated associations is very complicated. It creates new structures that we don't understand, with all sorts of opportunities for unforeseen consequences and potentially the possibility of infinite regress in the question of accountability. That's a serious criticism that those of us, and I am on the side of enforceability here, need to reach out to and address. So my suggestion is this. Let's have membership for everybody. Let's have tens of thousands of members. Why not? What is the harm? Certainly then, you would have, under that model, there'd be no accountability of those members to anyone else. They'd do exactly what they wanted. So what? Let's look at what the powers that members have. Firstly, the board had the duty to their interests. Let's make the whole world members. That would be fine. They would have the ability to go to court and say, ICANN has broken its own rules. We've gone through the process and the bylaws for approaching this, and it has still defied it. Please enforce this against them. If the whole world had the ability to do that, great. And then there may be some other statutory powers, and there are some other statutory powers, and we would need to look at that. Many of these are things like the right to have access to certain types of statutory information. Again, I see no harm in making that available to the world at large. And then, if there are some others that make it difficult to apply this, I think we owe it to ourselves to spend some time to see whether or not that could be resolved by some other mechanism. It has been suggested that a membership agreement is a means by which members can control how they act with each other, how they exercise these powers, that can't be applied through the bylaws, which would mean at the point at which you applied to become a member, you would sign up to something that then accepted that the IRP had to be used first before you went to court, that accepted that we don't get to wind up the company unless there is 99% agreement or whatever it might be. A membership agreement of all the members could be applied to thousands of members and could have them all agreeing to apply the processes that we create. But it would give us the opportunity to get past this concern
about creating new structures and complication, and have the simple ability to say that ICANN is here for everyone, and that it is responsible to everyone, and everyone ultimately has the right to hold it to its commitments. So I think we should add to the list of things that we consider what flaws have not been considered in this, and how they might be addressed, rather than quickly dismissing it because, oh, I haven't thought of one thing or another. Is there something that could be done to solve that and make this alternative membership model that addresses the concerns of the anti-membership critics something that would be a viable way forward? Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Malcolm. There's no reaction to... we'll have, after we've heard everyone, there's going to be an open mic session for questions. Do you want to add your vision to... Oh, I see you're clever. You're using the last moments to make sure you have the last word. You've been there before, right? Becky.
Toomey? Was that Paul Toomey who just did that?
Yes. Yeah.
Figures. Okay. I'd like to talk a little bit about the empowered SO and AC model. But before I start, I want to just reiterate something that Jonathan Zuck reminded us of this morning. More than a year ago, a year ago, the U.S. government called on this community to develop a consensus proposal for transitioning responsibility for IANA to the global internet community. At the time, the request that came from the U.S. government and the board's response to that was very much focused on the technical and operational aspects of ICANN's provisioning of IANA services, not on accountability issues. And in fact, accountability issues were viewed as potentially distracting and diverting. In a moment that I think all of us will remember, all of the GNSO folks and Byron Holland and everybody standing up at the podium, at the microphone, this community came together and said, no, we insist that the accountability issues be addressed as a condition precedent to this technical transition. We've just gone through this comment period. We've heard from the community. Those concerns are real and they are persistent. But we are hearing some objections and concerns that I think, and this is my humble opinion, reflect some renewed concerns about the potential for the accountability work stream to delay or impede the IANA transition. Nobody that I know and nobody that I've talked to in this group wants that to happen. That's a serious thing. We need to be worried about it. But those concerns should not lead us to check our, to compromise on our fundamental and shared determination to address and resolve the gaps in ICANN's accountability. We can do both. It should lead us to check our dug-in conclusions, sorry, maybe slogans, at the door, to listen hard to each other and to attempt to bridge the gaps between and among what I think are all legitimate perspectives that we're bringing to this table, this very important table. So a number of us have been thinking hard in the last couple of days about how to address the concerns that we've heard about two in particular. One, that the membership model is feels like a fundamental change in ICANN's structure, and that it's elaborate and complicated. And two, the also very legitimate question about who watches the watchers in that. And so we've come up with something that we are calling the empowered SOAC model, and this is what it entails. Essentially, we are comfortable with ICANN's SO and AC structure. We know it. We love it. Let's keep it. But let's empower those existing bodies to be the guardians of ICANN's accountability by giving them the authority, by giving the SOs and ACs directly the authority and responsibility contemplated in the draft report. Under this approach, that authority would be granted to the SOs and ACs. It doesn't involve creating any new entities that raise accountability issues. In fact, to accomplish this, the only thing that needs to happen is that the SOs and ACs articulate the status quo that they intend and have for years been coming together to collaborate to exercise the powers and authorities bestowed on the relevant body in the ICANN bylaws. Not only those powers and authorities that are bestowed right now, but the new powers and authorities that Work Party 2 worked out. This intention can be expressed how in the standard operating procedure for each SO and AC. A resolution, if that works, it can be expressed tomorrow, it can be expressed next month, it can be expressed in 6 months, whenever the organization is ready. The critical piece is the intention to collaborate and associate with each other and work together to accomplish the goals and carry out those duties. So that's the proposal. That's the empowered SOAC model. I know this doesn't solve the concerns that we've heard about dispute resolution and contentiousness, but let's sit down and talk through those. I think that there are practical and simple solutions to these concerns, and I'm pretty sure that there are some that I haven't thought of. But that is an implementation issue. Let's resolve to really, you know, get to the point where we're talking about the complicated implementation issues. Did I make it?
Almost, Becky. That was perfect. Thank you. Next is Erica.
Thank you so much. I want to approach this from a little bit different angle because I don't want to talk so much about models. I like the most recent one, which I heard from Becky, but this is a very personal statement, and I think she's right to differentiate between the models we choose and the implementations and the principles which we have to apply, because they will have to apply probably in all models, whatever we choose. But I have one other point which I think we should pay maybe a little bit more attention, and I'm just saying this because I hear this again and again and again, and this is the idea that there is somehow the right legal model or the right headquarter, and this idea of finding the right headquarter will solve our problems. I'm just not believing in this. I think that California is maybe not the most ideal, but it's a good location. It is a place which gives us stability, which we know it has a history. I know that some governments have concerns about this, but you always have to, and I'm saying this, I mean, I'm European. There is no alternative. That's the problem. So even if you look for alternatives, you will always have to look for a location, with the exception you would go to international waters and we go on a cruise and stay on international waters. There's always a location. Now, there are locations like Geneva you can think about, but I think it's just taking us away from what we really have to fulfill, which is to find the best model for the current stages. And these models, whichever we choose, and the headquarter in California as well, will always have to fulfill these principles, will have to have global by nature, it has to fulfill the global public interest. So these are the guiding principles. And don't be confused, I'm saying this because I think it's, when you go somewhere else, it would be better. It will not be better. It can't, because governments, in finding the right models how the internet will work, in many locations have difficulties in identifying the best way forward. Or when you look into the legal intervention which we see sometimes, which some of you might be concerned about, you see them coming from all locations in the moment. So it's not just from the U.S., but you see it from many other locations as well. So my plea is just let us ignore this at this stage, and let's not confuse it with the principles and the models we have to find. It's okay? 2 minutes?
Perfect. Wonderful. Thank you very much.
I'm well-trained European Parliament.
A skill that you might consider sharing with a wider group within ICANN. And I'm not speaking of this group.
I'm not sure if you will like it. It's a German way.
Okay, next is Paul Toomey.
It is a little. So this is the, I'd like to, seeing Edward does have a slogan, reinforce the founding multi-stakeholder principles model. And with apologies, Malcolm, it's something of a response to yours. I'd basically like to reinforce the model of Alan and Becky combination of the ASOs and the supporting organizations, the supporting organizations and the others, perhaps with enforced diversity requirements. Some have clear diversity requirements, others do not, and tend to produce the same result year in, year out, decade out. And I think that should be reviewed. More power for faster turnover of the board is actually at the heart of all of this discussion. And if you look at the history of the ICANN board, the community hasn't done a bad job in changing people from certain decisions. The trouble, I think, what people are reflecting is it's taken 2 or 3 years to achieve that. So at the heart of this, coming to Alan's perspective, is potential circumstances where under some contractual arrangement, a supporting organisation or some combination could actually move to change a board member mid-term. I think that seems to be the key thing that would be preferred. I think a more effective perceived legitimate independent review panel, as is being, perceived, is an important part. This model strongly stands against a broader membership model, which puts ICANN not at risk of political manipulation of a broad set of members by any combination of ethnic, national, or fixed interests. And I'd stress that that membership is not the same thing as participation. I would finalise with my one example. We tried this a little while ago in terms of voting into membership, and in one part of the world, we had board members elected with 300 votes and with 400 votes, and another part of the world, we had 60,000 from one country, followed a week later by 120,000 quickly mobilised in a second country, and the third country, which could have mobilised tens of millions, just came late to the game. That's the sort of thing I'm particularly fearful of for a broad membership base.
Thank you, Paul. And now we have Jonathan. Jonathan, you sort of opened the morning, and now you're closing almost closing this session.
Thank you very much. I guess I began with a little bit of a bright and cheery Pollyanna-ish view of our work, and I want to return to the real politics side of it as well. I guess what I want to share is just my experience, and I've only been around for half of the life of ICANN, but what I've perceived is an almost institutional resistance to accountability. And I think that has shown itself in many, many different aspects, and it from the failure to set measurable objectives and then measure later or not whether they were achieved, and objectives like, well, we're going to hire 2 more people to deal with that problem, and then at the end of the year saying, well, we succeeded in hiring 2 more people to deal with that problem. And that method of dealing with accountability and with problems and a desire to drive policy through anecdote rather than data is also persistent within the organization. And if we look at the areas in which we've seen incredible revelations of the community swaying the board, I think if we look very carefully at them, there are also instances in which there was exceedingly high leverage in the hands of the community. So that we got ATRT reviews started as part of the affirmation of commitments, which was part of getting an agreement to make the U.S. have less of a sort of oversight role, as they did with the memorandums of understanding and the joint project agreements that preceded the AOC. If we look at the most recent revelation of coming and resisting what was an incredible resistance to the community desiring to have accountability be part of this process, there was incredible resistance and delay to that process, and we shouldn't forget that when talking about how well this model has worked in the past. It was the fact that there was a deep embedded desire to make that transition happen that gave the community that leverage to sway the board and to change the course that the organization was taking around the transition. And so the model that I want to propose, as unfriendly and as harsh as it may sound, is one of leverage. And that the bottom line is that if we want to empower the community, the overall community of ICANN, instead of the organization that's ICANN, and I certainly don't mean to suggest the board are not part of the community, they are, but there is an institution that has arisen and a method of operation that has evolved as with that institution that needs to be tested and leveraged from time to time by the community as a whole. And I don't believe that it's all goodwill that will get that done, that it is leverage that will get that done. And that's why I'm supportive of a model, and there are several, in which there's leverage put in the hands of the community on the time to time, from time to time when it's necessary to get the job done. So I just wanted to share those observations. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. Those are very, very useful set of statements. I think I took plenty of notes of the various requirements, which were, I think, laid out very clearly by every speaker. So first of all, I want to thank all the speakers, not for managing their times properly, although I'm very grateful for that, but essentially to provide the substance around their positions that gives us greater understanding and knowledge about where they're coming from, what they're aiming at, and I think that's going to be prove extremely valuable in the next steps of our debates. Thomas wanted to make a quick intervention.
Yes, just very briefly. I had reached out to Holly and Rosemary to ask them whether there had been any statements in the presentations that made it obvious that the speakers had based their proposals on inaccurate legal understanding, so that we shouldn't be misled by something that potentially couldn't be operationalized. And you would certainly correct me if I'm misrepresenting what you were stating, but they said if we look into the detail, they can make pretty much everything work, but a lot of the some statements that have been made are not entirely correct. So we would actually need to look at the implementation model behind the suggestions that we have made and look at that in more detail. So just a little bit word of caution, you know, that not every single word that has been said can be taken for granted, and we would need to further dig into that. Holly, you would like to add to that?
Yeah, just to confirm, I think without knowing the details on which everyone who is speaking is making their position statements known, it's difficult for us to comment on any underlying assumptions because the underlying assumptions are not always stated. That's what I meant. I didn't mean to point out that there were any particular errors. I think broadly from what we heard, all of the different models that are under discussion are workable in some fashion. And again, devil's always in the details. Thank you.
Thank you, Holly. I think on one side, devil is in the details, and on the other, the power is on our group to decide on the balance of requirements that are going to be in front of us. And that should definitely drive our work further, not rush into the details too early, but also make sure we understand upon which requirements we are advancing when we're advancing on a particular model, so that we can actually explain why we're making those choices to the overall community. I will now turn to Kavos in a couple of seconds. Just we'll take a short round of clarifying questions, if there are any, about the overall discussion that took place. Then we'll break for lunch. I see everything's ready. So just for people who want to ask questions, be mindful you're standing between the group and lunch.
and lunch will enable us to chew this up.
Oh.
Yeah. And obviously, we'll come back to the next steps after lunch. So in terms of questions, I assume Erica and Paul are old hands in the AC room. Don't want to be misinterpreted here. And so I have Cavus, and then I'll go to James and Alan. Cavus?
Yes, I don't want to speak on any model, but I'm just asking whether we have considered a hybrid of various models. Some AC or obviously taking model.
That's
the other, the
there might be some hybrids.
Yeah, the hybrids. Have we considered that?
Somewhere. So the statement is, there is no assumption that we have looked at all models. There is no assumption that a new model might not spring out of our further discussions. We can call it hybrid, we can call it creative model. This discussion is not over, and that's precisely the point of this exchange. So a very direct response is, no, we haven't considered all hybrid models yet. That might be the case if that's where the discussion takes us. Next in the queue is James.
Hi, thanks. James speaking, and my question is for Alan, or directed perhaps at Alan's description of models. It's going to sound like I'm criticizing it, but I'm actually kind of intrigued by it, so just bear with me a little bit. But in the instance, I think you mentioned that there would be a letter from board members that would uphold their or enshrine their commitment to representing the interests of the community. I'm curious as to how we would, and I'm deliberately trying not to say enforce, but how we would hold them to those commitments, because it strikes me as the kind of person that would perhaps be subject to the use of that letter would be the kind of person that would disagree with whether or not they'd upheld those commitments. And so what is there another stress test in the works here, or how would you possibly resolve that paradox where the person that is no longer responsive to the interests of the community is still going to honor their commitments in that letter?
Thanks, James. So that's the resignation letter kind of...
Right, and I don't know if that's a question directly at Alan or if it's just something that we need to put on the to-do list, to flesh out that model.
If we move on with that model and that particular implementation model, definitely we need to be very clear about what that looks like. The next is Alan. Oh, that's how fitting.
And I will choose to answer that question if you don't mind. This was an idea that came out of the legal counsel saying that it is quite possible to have a irrevocable letter signed before requiring an irrevocable letter to be signed saying that they will step down if certain circumstances are met. I am presuming that effectively is a contract, that it can be made enforceable, and we need to identify who has the standing to enforce it. And I made some suggestions in my written document. I am not a lawyer, and I'm not trying to write that document, but I believe it is enforceable. So that would give the things. And I'm not convinced, by the way, that whoever the community would ask to step down is a recalcitrant person. It's just someone who we don't agree with. And, to use the divorce phrase or slogan, irreconcilable differences. Does not mean they're recalcitrant, it just means we think differently. The issue I wanted to raise, where I put my hand up, is two of the speakers said things that I think are at odds with my understanding of reality. One of them was Robin, who was suggesting the empowered designator model. My understanding of the designator model is it also requires an unincorporated association or some legal persona, which is the sticking block on the on the member model. So I think that one has the same problem, and therefore that would have to be resolved. And then this leads to my second comment, to Jordan's comment, that he said the membership model puts the power in the community where it belongs. And that's what we thought, but we have since found out that there's a whole bunch of parts of the community who have said they can't participate or won't participate, and therefore it doesn't put it in the hands of the whole community, but a very potentially small subset of the community, and that's one of the problems I have with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna. Next is Robin, and I would close the queue after Jordan. Robin?
Thank you. First, I just wanted to quickly address Alan's point. I actually was assuming we would have UAs in the empowered designator model, so I just wanted to make that correction to your statement. And then I have a question. I'd like a clarification if somebody could help me out here. What is the difference between the empowered designator model and the empowered SOAC model, since the SOs and the ACs are the designators? Could somebody tell me what the difference is between these two proposals? Thank you.
I don't know if Becky was one of the proponents of this. A quick follow-up. That would, and an appropriate answer may be, oh, we don't know. We would have to actually talk this further to define whether there are differences.
Well, it sounds like we're talking about the same thing. So if we are, that's great. But if there are different goals and distinctions, I'd like to know what they are.
There might be a difference into whether we need a legal person.
I don't think there is. I'm assuming we need a legal person. I'm assuming we need UAs under empowered designator. So
yes, that's what I understand from you. Okay.
So first of all, I am not a legal expert on this, what I said is we are recognizing and empowering, giving the powers, essentially the powers that members would have, to the SOs and ACs, by articulating their intention to come together to exercise those powers, it essentially creates the entity that you need for enforcing those. So there's no requirement that anybody file an unincorporated association or anything like that, although I don't actually think there's any requirement under Robin's proposal that anybody file an unincorporated association. They could do designation by the same model, which is that whoever, the SOs and ACs. But what I'm proposing is to get rid of the middleman and the question of who watches the watchers and go directly to the SOs and ACs.
Thank you, Becky.
This is great because it sounds like we're talking about exactly the same thing. The SOs and the ACs themselves would have these powers. Whether you call them designators or not, I don't think is important. So it sounds like we're talking about the same thing.
Wolfgang is next. Please consider lowering your hands when you've spoken. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. You know, for all the proponents for a membership model, I recommend to remember the history ICANN has with the discussion of members. In the first bylaws of ICANN, there was an empty Article 2, which said just member, and then in brackets, to be defined by the Membership Advisory Committee. I think this report from the Membership Advisory Committee, which was done by the Berkman Center in the background, is an interesting document if you read it with today's eyes. Then later it was revised, and we had the recommendation by the Bild Group, von Karl Bild, when he recommended membership should be reduced to domain name holders only. So we have 250 million domain name holders. This is quite a lot. So that means if you move forward with the membership question, please be very careful how you define a member. This is really important. And otherwise, you ended in a nowhere land. Paul Twomey has made some good points. So this opens the door for all kinds of manipulations and captures.
Thank you, Wolfgang. I think just a point of clarification. Most of the membership model talks here were about a model, the reference model from the group, where the ASOs and ACs are the members. And I want to be very clear on that because I've heard a lot of confusion in the community discussion about this, about the risk of getting millions of members. That is not possible under the reference model. And yet Malcolm is suggesting this, so it's also not off the table at all. But let's not confuse an open membership model with a model where the members is just a legal tool, a slight legal tool we're adding to the ASO and ACs, and with all the discussion that's taking place on this. So I just want to make this point of clarification to avoid that confusion is spread across the wider community on this topic. And Jordan, you're the next speaker, and then we'll break for lunch.
Thank you, Matthew. I kind of wanted to respond to Alan's point, but I think it's already kind of been dealt with. The kind of empowered SOAC model that Becky was talking about gets rid of the kind of middleman, the separate UA thing that creates all these kind of vertical or linear accountability concerns. And even when we had those in place, this idea seems to have taken hold somehow that you had to join these UAs to be able to have a say in them. And that was never part of the proposal. So it's even better if that just stops becoming an issue altogether. But no one, this idea that the model would lock anyone out of participating in anything has never been on the table. And so it would never have affected any of the powers and roles that SOs and ACs have today. It won't tomorrow either. So wherever we go, I think we have to be really clear that in building accountability tools for ICANN, the general principle should be, that I support anyway, is that everyone who can participate can do so without any joining of things being required. In other words, that participation remains as procedurally free of any encumbrance, of any obligation as it is today. And I would be surprised if anyone disagreed with that as a kind of founding principle to the approach that we're taking.
Thank you, Jordan. I think with these initial remarks, we will break for lunch. I think how much time was? I think we have an hour for lunch. That will also give us time as co-chair to convene and think about the next steps, because we've made good progress this morning. We reviewed the whole output from the public comments and the work parties. Caboose, I acknowledge your hand. And have this very useful discussion. And so now the question for us is going to be how we make the best use of our valuable face-to-face time to move this further while we're here. So, Caboose, you have
a short question.
Last question.
Do you provide some overview of summary of the discussions? Because people are talking of different terms without going to the details, saying that empowering the SO and SE and the AC, empowering on what respect, empowering on what standing. So, just with talking, could you have a possibility of a summary of the discussion?
Because I think you're talking about our last lunch here, but yeah. I'm afraid that's going to be our main course for the lunch to come, and hopefully we can share something by after that. Thank you very much, Kevin. That's called food for thought.
Good session, everybody. Thanks.